that we are a few minutes behind time. We want to quickly end this engagement. Comrade Minister, welcome. You look well and fresh. Well, it's Tuesday today. It feels like Blue Monday. All right. Welcome. Welcome to yourself and the team. We, as usual, would want to start with the introductions so we know who is here. From your side, and the Auditor General's Office, National Treasury is not here yet. From the police, and then comrades introduce themselves, and then we get into the business of the day. So I'll hand over to the side to my left, Comrade Minister.
My name is Dipo Peters. I'm the Minister of Transport.
Good morning, Chair, members of the committee. My name is Roshan Mora, Chair of the Board of Central.
Good morning, Chair. I'm the Acting CEO, Koos Smit.
Morning, Inga Mulder, CFO.
Alison Lawless, Chair of ARC and Board Member of CENRA.
Morning. My name is Chris Lavisa, coming from the Department of Transport, DDG Roads, as well as the Board Member. Thank you.
Morning, everyone. Johannes Makhatu, Sandral, Compliance and Risk Officer.
Martin Maluleke, Deputy CFO.
Okay. Yep. No.
Morning. It's the Treasurer here from the Auditor General, Manager on the Sandral Audit.
Good morning, Honorable Chair and Members. My name is Tsirom Pempe, Stakeholder Liaison Manager, Auditor General.
Right, you please introduce yourself.
Thank you. Morning, Chair. Honourable Members, I'm Lieutenant General Matabat, the Deputy National Head of the DPCI.
Good morning, Honourable Chair, Honourable Members. I'm Siani Lebakeng, the Section Head Anti-Corruption Task Team, DPCI.
Right, comrades, please introduce ourselves.
Good morning, Chair. Nyamezi Liboy, member of the committee.
Good morning, Chair. Saki Kegana, member of the committee.
Sabine Laslalo, Nkulewa Senga, member of the committee.
Molweni Tombo Viomende, member of the committee.
Good morning, Manny Defreitas, member of the transport committee.
Good morning, David Ross, member of the SCOPA committee.
Right, thank you very much. I'm Comrade Temba Godi. I chair the committee. Well, Comrade Minister, I'm sure as you'll be aware, we had an engagement with Sandral before and had to end our engagement before time. Because two things would have happened. We felt that we did not have the information in the manner that we requested, which not adequately afford us the opportunity to engage. We in this committee don't like getting information here. We want to get it beforehand so we can process it. Because I'm sure by now everybody knows that, contrary to popular belief, this committee will read. And we are always interested in details, the minutest details. So if we don't have that information, we're not able to process it. I think that was one. Two, we're not going to engage in the kind of atmosphere that we would always prefer to have, where we interact cordially and exchange information, because we felt that we're not on the same level. Very negative. If you have that, well, then we'll be unable to fruitfully exchange, you know, on information and achieve what we seek to achieve. Our objective is not a confrontation. Our objective is information. Identifying what is wrong and ensuring that it is correct. So we then agreed that no, let us pull back and have an engagement before Parliament rises. Now Parliament is rising next week, so we had to squeeze today, and want to appreciate the fact that Sanral was able late last week to confirm their availability, and that's why here today. So I appreciate that. So we're meeting now full of smiles, without any frowning faces, because once you have that, they're not going to have problems. So I suppose we're now meeting in a much, much more better environment from our side. However, that will not take away from the substantive issues that we want to raise. I do want to say, Comrade Minister, that we take breaches of the PFMA very seriously. And as would have been noted, in the last 4 or 5 weeks, our engagements with departments and entities have purely been on the rents and cents. Complying with the PFMA, especially the legal requirement for the accounting authorities and accounting officers to prevent irregular expenditure. So whatever else we define and whatever else we say about irregular expenditure, the law says prevent its occurrence. And when it happens, we must be able to give a proper explanation there too. So I think that's why we're here, and we also want to acknowledge the Hawks. They have now become a permanent feature of our engagement, so that in our engagement, because as you know, irregular expenditure can mean a lot of things. If there are issues around which we want further engagement, they are here to do exactly that, so that we don't have to depend on the accounting authorities and officers. They have not convinced Parliament that they have the necessary enthusiasm to tackle the wrong that happens with financial management. So we want to thank them. Now, two things. May I request, comrades, that we switch our cellular phones off. My old phone is off. So please, for the next hour and a half or 2 hours, let's just keep our cellular phones off, so that should not disturb the recording here. To Comrade Minister, would want you to, as we engage, observe and pick up on issues that we may want to comment on. At the end, we'll give you some time, two and a half minutes, to lift out issues that you feel you may want to talk to arising out of these engagements. For that that opportunity, unless the officials say the minister told us to do ABCD, then in your presence you may assist to enlighten us. But in the absence of that, just note and pick up issues that you may want to talk to at the end. Right, comrades, as we have always done, we'll allow those who have been assigned the responsibilities to ask all the questions they have, and then comrades can then come up and make follow-ups. Now we'll hand over to Comrade Mente to lead our engagement. Yes.
Thank you, Chairperson. And good morning once again to the SANRAL team. Thank you very much for the information you have provided. It then at least gave some light in terms of the irregular expenditure. However, it also gave a sense that there is still an imbalance between the understanding of the SANRAL and the AXA. We must remember that the AG is a Chapter 9 institution bound by the Constitution to give, to otherwise manage and ensure that financial responsibilities by departments are adhered to and compliance to finance is also adhered to. So I would like to, Chairperson, highlight the following, that on the spreadsheet provided, there is 1.1 billion that has got the same explanation in terms of not understanding the triple PFA as it was indicated in the last meeting, which then later was picked up by the AG in 2013, and that they tried to correct it and kept some of the contracts because they were already in place, and of which they will correct them when they are expiring and new tenders coming in. But I would like to note the following. There seems to be a high concern by the Auditor General in terms of compliance. When the Auditor General refers to this 1.1 billion in his findings, it's on page 132 of the annual report of the SANRAL. And on page 132, the Auditor General reflects on compliance with legislation. And he's very much unhappy with the fact that the procurement and contract management within the SANRAL is problematic. If you take sentence 25, 26, 27, which talks to this irregular expenditure, invitations of competitive bidding, a person in the SANRAL department does not disclose interest, contracts that were awarded to bidders on preferences, calculation were not done in accordance, quotations that were not in place because they were supposed to have sought 3 quotations before they can issue out anything, in particular for values of 500,000 and under, and contracts that are not done within the practices of the supply chain management. Now, my question is, within this 1.1 billion and with what the Auditor General is saying, what is it that you are going to do? What are the measures in place to ensure that you prevent this? Just let me reiterate what I said in the last meeting, that irregular expenditure does not necessarily mean money was wasted, but at the very same time, it doesn't necessarily mean that money was not wasted, because people use these methods of not following treasury regulations, of not following PFMA, to corruptly reimburse themselves in a manner in which a broom, when it's 50 rand, they will buy it for 200 rand, and nobody will see value for money because the invoice will be saying 200 rand a broom was bought. And the person who signs off does not go to any other supplier to check how much the broom costs in actual fact. So that's where corruption takes place. So what measures do you have in place to prevent that this 1.1 billion is not going to be seen again?
Thank you, Chairperson. To answer the member's question directly, that practice, like we said in the last meeting, in terms of utilizing that model of awarding contracts was stopped in 2013. So the measure that has been put into place at SANRA is that there's been a termination of that method of calculating the points to award those contracts.
But the sentences that she was reading are from your current annual report.
Yes, sir. Yes, the Auditor General is reported in terms of 2016 with the extent of the irregular expenditure. Now, the balance of the contracts that were awarded in 2012, 2013 were for 3 years. Now, this is the latter part of the end of this contract.
Hence, the practice has stopped. We're not yet dealing with the specifics, which may then depend on the year of the awarding. But I'm saying that what she was referring to is in your current annual report, and the AG has put that as a general statement of what is happening at the point when they were when they were auditing. Unless if you're saying that reference is purely and only in relation to those contracts that happened then that are still current, but as of the 12 months from April 2015 to March 2016, there isn't any case of doing all the things that she referred to. Point 25 to, I think, 28, 29.
That's correct, Chair. That practice is stopped. So where the Auditor General and the annual report makes reference in terms of those relevant paragraphs, that relates to the old contracts, and that can be confirmed by the CFO and the chairman of the Audit and Risk Committee. So
but
that practice.
Do you have the annual report with you? Yeah. Let's go to page 200.
The CFO is going to help.
Yeah, I'm saying let's go to page 200. Paragraph 40. I see if you it's a regular expenditure, that's the heading. Supply chain policy not adhered to. It has an opening balance, and then it says add irregular expenditure current year. What does that mean? Does that not mean that we have irregular expenditure in the current year under review? That's not what that sentence means.
Chair, thank you. Yes, it does. The chair refers to the one portion of it. If I may just address in terms of the other issues that have, which has been mentioned by the member, what we've done is we've strengthened our SEM unit in order to make sure that there's an overview across the agency to make sure things like the three quotations, the BEE certificates and those things are reviewed on a more frequent basis. And then we've also, in terms of the specific ones for the BEE certificates, which has been issued electronically by those agencies, we've written a letter to National Treasury to make them aware that there's this practice where the BEE certificates are issued electronically, which means that you will never have an original paper copy. So we've written to National Treasury to say that is currently an issue for us, but on all the other the non-compliance issues as listed, we have strengthened in terms of our internal control. I think from the AG's side, they are also currently busy to make sure that those actions have been implemented by us.
Okay, let me then go back to the simplicity of the question where the chair tried to elaborate. how long were those contracts before? Because this was picked up in 2013. Now it's 2016. How long were those contracts?
So these contracts, in average, they, some of them are 3 years plus a two-year extension. So you would have those contracts are a minimum of 3 years and a maximum of 5 years. The practice at Sandal, in terms of awarding this contract using this method, has been there since 2002. So that practice continued from 2002 until the Auditor General then issued a finding and a report in 2013.
But are we... So, we'll go. I mean, so you run Sandral according to practice, not according to the law. And in the process of using your own practice and contravening the law, existing law. Is that what we're being taught? Well, I'll always refer to the chairperson. In terms of the PFMA, he's the accounting authority. So when he comes here, he's the one who must talk to us. If there's anybody else he wants to assist him, he can say so.
Thank you, Chair. I think,
yeah.
Yes, you are correct. I think, and we must admit that Sandra did utilize that practice previously. When a decision and a discussion took place in 2013, and National Treasury did not give the necessary consent, that practice immediately stopped. So yes, I think Sandra did rely on that practice previously. But I want to add that the Auditor General, in its audit and in the annual report and in their report, did not find any extent of any fraud contract.
No, it's fine. See, the issue is not the Auditor General. We must do the right thing without waiting for the Auditor General, because that law is not meant for the Auditor General. It's meant for us, to guide us. It's supposed to be the basis on which we premise all our actions, and not jump when the Auditor General says there is an issue. Yes, comrade.
Okay. Within the practice that you use since 2002, is there any of you as board members that was there since 2002 here with us today?
Chairperson, no, none of the non-executive board members. The executive board member is also not, he's retired. So we have one executive board member, and at that point in time, none of the current non-executive board members were board members.
We are not there. Okay.
Okay. The reason why I'm asking that question is because the triple PFA, which you accuse of not guiding you in terms of the lowest price, has been there since 2000. Now, I find it very difficult that Sanral has somehow established its own practice besides the Treasury regulations, and there's a triple PFA which you clearly indicate to it on your presentation as having failed to guide you. And the very same document has been in existence since 2000. Now, I am not comfortable. 1.1 billion, and it's down now to 1.1 billion. 2013-14, when this was established, it was 2.5 billion. Has been corruptly been taken away by some of the officials, and nothing is happening because we say it's a practice. When the AG picks this up, on page 133 of the annual report, and it gets to show that some of the board members, not because they do not see that this practice is not right, corruption is taking place. People are taking money through irregular expenditure. Some people are not correcting it. The AG on page 33 says, under expenditure management, the PFMA was not correctly adhered to, section 51(1)(b), Roman figure 2.
Wait, what page, comrade?
Page 133. Expenditure management. And he indicates there the discomfort that there are no steps taken, there are no consequences. He wouldn't say there are no consequences when he has never warned Sanral of such irregularities before. He's expressing his discomfort on no consequences being applied to people that are doing this irregular expenditure. Why is that so?
Chair, with your consent, I'll ask the CFO to respond to that.
Chair, with our engagement with National Treasury on this specific matter, with the lowest acceptable price, we've had several discussions. They've indicated to us, even though, and the AG also agreed that it is non-compliant, but it's not that contracts were not awarded illegally. It's non-compliant with that specific lowest acceptable price, but it was never regarded as illegal, and therefore the contracts were not cancelled. They've allowed us to actually continue and conclude on the contracts until they run out.
No, which is... Yeah.
Sure.
Yeah.
Sentence 30. On 133, please refer to it. The accounting authority did not take effective steps to prevent irregular expenditure as required by the section I've mentioned of the PFMA. You wouldn't just say that if ever it was the first occurrence. He is expressing his discomfort that the accounting authority does not take steps.
I think I want to take also guidance from yourself in that we don't want to make this a contestation between ourselves and the Auditor General with regard to interpretation. But we can confirm that the so-called practice on non-compliance was terminated and stopped in 2013. So the Auditor General could be referring, and I hear what the member is saying, but I think we must take it in the broader context here, that this practice with regard to routine road maintenance, if you may allow me, did stop in 2013. But the statement by the Auditor General is noted, but if you look at the other issues with regard to irregular expenditure, in terms of our spreadsheet, in our opinion, sufficient action has been taken. But I don't want to make this a contestation between ourselves and the Auditor General.
Yeah, no.
Except
no.
To confirm
no,
that
no,
this
no.
has stopped.
No, that's fine. We'll never have a contestation because once the finding is made, there's no basis. Contestations happen when there are management letters. Beyond that, there is none. And I think, Chair, I think our point around regular expenditure is not limited to what happened in 2012, 2013. That's why I referred you to page 200, which indicates that there is actually a portion of a regular expenditure that happened in the last 12 months, in the 12 months under review. So what the Auditor General has written here refers not only to what has happened then, but what has happened in the 12 months under review. Let's not limit it to that, but we're looking at the totality of whatever has happened as regular expenditure in the entity. Yes, Comrade. Point of order. Okay.
Can you ask him to answer questions, Chairperson? If he can't answer questions, he must just say so. If he does want to put up the relevant documentation and proof, provide us with proof that this is what the National Treasury says, can you provide those details, rather than taking us to and fro on the basis of assumptions. I think the Honourable Member is really sticking to what the Auditor General has put in front of us. And we did clarify him last time that we relate our information to what the Auditor General is saying, not to assumption and thumb sucking. Can you tell us facts and provide us with letters?
Let's continue, Comrade. Chair, let me clarify the point. I think the issue of irregular expenditure, we're looking at it in its totality, not just limited to that earlier period. Because if you go to page 200, there is a figure there of irregular expenditure that happened in the 12 months under review. And if you look at on that page, what page is this? 133. If you look at paragraph 32, it says, due to a slow response by senior management and a lack of timely consequences, there had been limited progress by SANRAL in addressing the deficiencies regarding financial and performance reporting processes, compliance, and related internal controls. So it goes beyond that part. That part where the practice was stopped, the contracts are not necessarily illegal and therefore were not terminated, they are going to end, fine. But broadly and generally, because we want you to prevent irregular expenditure completely, so that we have absolute compliance. Yes, Comrade, continue.
Okay, with your practice and the renewal of contracts, which is subjected to satisfaction of you as SANRAL, since 2013 when the AG established that the practice is wrong, and some of those contracts were already in place, some are ending, why did you then renew the others or extended the others for 2 years and still use the very same practice? Because it's 2015-2016. You are basing your argument on the old practice and the 1.1 billion that has been spent on irregular expenditure. Now my question is, you still extended those contracts with 2 years and utilizing the very same practice. Why was that?
Those contracts were not they were not new contracts. They were contractual obligations in terms of the existing contract for the period. If we cancel those contracts, then SANRAL would have been subject to litigation. So we had no position to be able to cancel those contracts. Neither were the new contracts. I'm not sure the CFO's got anything else to add.
No, I don't think you understand.
Yes.
You have a contractual obligation. That is fine. We avoid litigation because that's a waste of money. My question is, some of them did come to an end in terms of 3 years. 2013, 14, 15, some were already in the middle of their contract. So by 2014, they ended. You still extended them by 2 years. And within your extension, it's subjected to the satisfaction of you as SANRAL. You cannot sign a contract that say we are bound as SANRAL to extend. You are only extending based on your satisfaction. You're satisfied. Now the problem is that the practice is wrong. The third year comes to a finish, and your extension has to have other elements of change in terms of the regulations. You cannot extend based on the very same practice. My question is, why did you extend on the same practice instead of applying the new method of the triple PFA as you have been guided by Treasury and the AG?
So, sorry, my apologies. I think I misunderstood when I replied earlier. I now fully understand it, and the CFO will help me to provide the technical submission to reply.
Thanks, Jay. All the contracts have in the contract a 2-year extension period based on the performance of the contractor. So if they perform, you must extend the contract. However,
But when you contract a person, that person is expected to perform. So when you perform, do you get then rewarded for performing? I mean, that's the minimum thing you must do to perform.
Yes, that's exactly. So in the contract, you make provision, it's a three-year contract. If they perform, the contract will be extended for the two-year period. However, also with these contracts, we've said because we want to conclude on them and bring out the new in the new methodology with the agreed acceptable lowest price, we couldn't do all of them at the same time. So we staggered them over a period. Therefore, some of them were extended for that two-year period, which was already agreed in the contract. So it wasn't to do, we didn't extend all of them. We just wanted to stagger those contracts over a period of time. We couldn't let out all the routine road maintenance contracts at the same time.
So you're meaning you do not have capacity to look into the contracts in their entirety?
Sorry, Chair, no. In terms of the capacity of the industry, if you put out all the tenders at the same time, they must now tender on all these tenders. It's a huge amount of work for them. So in terms of the industry, the construction industry, to put out those tenders all at the same time would have a huge impact on the industry. Not so much Sandra, we've got sufficient project managers, but it would also be a constraint for us. But that's why there was only a few that was extended, not all of them. There was a natural progression of contracts ending over that period of time.
Chair, if it suits the committee member, we can provide those details in terms of those contracts, because we can confirm they're not all, but for satisfaction, we have no problem giving you a list of those that were not renewed and those that were, so you could attest it. I think what the CFO is also alluding to is that the industry and its capacity will only be able to undertake X amount of work, and if you terminate it and you did not have service providers in terms of all the routine road maintenance, then there would have been a collapse in terms of our road maintenance in the outlying areas of our country.
Yep, Comrade. Yeah, I know. Good.
I'm not satisfied. Let me just get to one more clarity. When are all these tenders ending? All of them. When are they ending?
As we said at the last submission, 2017 would be the last year, and it's in the region of approximately 200 million, am I correct? Approximately 200 million rand for 2017, based on our projections and based on the our computations at this point. So we do not think that we can confirm it would not exceed 200 million, and we can confirm 2017 will be the last financial year.
I hope that is correct, and I hope that the AG is not going to pick up the very same thing, because I'm not convinced that the AG would refer to such old contracts which you have tabled so many explanations within the AG's office trying to explain the situation of Sanral, and yet the AG still says there are these irregularities within Sanral. Moving forward, on the very same page, page 133, it talks of internal controls, 31 and 32. One of the sentences is the one which the chair referred to, the slow response by senior management, and financial and performance management by Sandra. Now, these irregularities that are there, which the AG keeps on hinting on them. What is the internal audit doing? Why isn't the internal audit assisting Sanral in terms of these irregularities? Do you have internal audit?
Chair, yes, we have the internal audit function is outsourced. So we have a firm of internal auditors that conduct the internal audit, and they do provide assistance to that. We have, as a board, noted those concerns that the Auditor General is raised with regard to the slow response by management, and we've addressed that through our Audit and Risk Committee as well to ensure that in the coming year that management keeps to the deadlines in terms of the Auditor General's expectations. So we have addressed that, the Honourable Committee Member, as a
but,
process
but,
and our chair.
Why did that happen? Why did management respond slowly and unsatisfactorily?
Management has advised us that there were times that whereby there were very tight deadlines and they were not able to provide the information, but it was provided late, but I think they tried to the best to be able to manage it. But the chair of the audit committee is also here, who's also a board member and can also provide input.
In fact, many of the items that are picked up here, the internal audit picked up, and we're busy addressing those, as has been alluded to. Essentially, capacity and systems need to be strengthened. And at SANRAL Lab, we're busy appointing staff, upgrading systems. Large amounts of it is control measures in terms of systems and safety, which we believe will be in place in the next few months.
Okay. What?
Mr. Chairman, I want to assure this committee by yourself that the Auditor General's comments over and above the issues with regard to financial facts have been duly noted, and we're putting measures to be able to ensure that we do not see a reoccurrence in terms of that. And we've ensured that the audit committee is on management. So we can assure you that 2017, you would not get a statement of that in the audit report.
Okay.
Why are you saying that you are dragging your legs in terms of applying some consequences? Why are you not disciplining people that are doing these things?
Is that in relation to the Auditor General's concern about management's slow response?
Yeah, it is on the very same page. Trying to get to it. It's under expenditure management. He says there are no consequences being applied.
In terms of the findings, we've issued disciplinary letters to all the staff who have contravened in various places.
Just a minute. What is your position in some?
A chair of ARC.
Chair of?
Audit, chair of Audit and Risk Committee.
But how do you answer to questions of disciplining staff? I thought that the CEO or the chair of the board is the person who should respond to that.
Sorry, Chair, apologies. Can ask that it's an internal management process that we've instructed the acting CEO. So maybe I can ask him to respond.
Chair, letters have been served, you know, as already been said, and to address these matters.
But why were they not addressed before the Auditor General made the finding?
It was, you know, it was in the making at that point, and on the investigation, some of the issues are still in progress.
The letters that you are referring to, when were they issued?
Chair, that was post year end and after the completion of the investigations.
Completion of the investigation when? Post year end, April, May, June, July, August, September, October, November.
Sorry, Chair, can we please ask the CFO, because she's been helping the board to drive the process in terms of those, because those staff fall directly within her component.
Some of them were concluded recently, but there were others that were earlier during the financial year, and then there was a couple in May, and so there's a couple that was only issued this week, and then there's one matter that is still under forensic investigation, which we've indicated that is still being, the charges are still being, well, they've yesterday been served, but that's it.
Then you concur with the AG that you are dragging your feet. Because the reason why I'm asking this question and precisely asking when is because the presentation you brought to us last week referred to investigation on everything. And the one that you have sent now recently refers to warning letters simply because we said there must be consequences. You're dragging your feet until you are told what to do. You concur with the AG that you are dragging your feet. You are not disciplining anyone. Everyone is taking money. Everyone does not follow procedure. And there's nothing happening to them. Chairperson, do you now concur with it?
Yeah, I think I also want to point out a correction. Yes, thank you very much. I think when we were here last time on the matter with the conflict of interest, we can confirm and we can provide the relevant proof that the investigation had commenced prior to us attending the SCOPA meeting.
Investigation
was completed thereafter.
In relation to the conflict of interest, yes, that is consistent. But what she's referring to is that on a number of other cases in this spreadsheet, which came last week, there is indication that people have been served with warning letters. But in the original submission, everything was not concluded. I think that's the point that she's making.
Chairperson, can they scroll down that presentation? You will see what we're talking about. All these cases in that very same presentation, no, this one is 29, the one that you brought on the 16th, everything was under investigation. Nothing was ever on warning letter or dismissal or anything. All of them were under investigation.
No. Let's not scroll it because this is today's presentation. Yeah, I think if you had brought that other week's presentation, then we'll be able to refer. But I think I do remember that it was only in the case of conflict of interest where they indicated that there are measures being taken. But as for the rest, is there no comrade who has that presentation of that other week? But anyway, continue. Because you see, Comrade Minister, our point of argument with Sandra was they actually did not believe that what was there considered a regular expenditure. And I think that is what got us off to a rocky start. And so they could not have taken any action against anybody because they believed that they had done nothing wrong. Up to that point where the AG made his finding and subsequent stopped the process. So that this presentation of today says warning letters have been sent. So that's why she was asking, when was it done? Was it done in the last 2 weeks or what?
Yes.
Right. I'm just trying to give you context. So, yeah.
Yes, I just confirmed with management that those letters were only sent in the last 2 weeks.
Right. Okay.
Now the AG is right. We have management at Sandal that cannot act. They only act when somebody else says so. We have internal audit. Worst part of it, outsourced, being paid, and cannot even hint or point to irregularities that people are committing carelessly or sometimes with the intent of being corrupt themselves. Because this irregular expenditure, if Parliament was not rising next week, Chair, we would have to scrutinize the invoices. 1.1 billion. And people only get warned when SCOPA says, why are you not warning?
And the acting CEO says, we send the warning letters subsequent to year end and thereafter. And yet, these were only done last week.
And the AG signed his letter on the 31st of July. Now we are on November. You didn't listen to AG. You still think that the AG, being the Chapter 9, is against you. What we started off with in the last session, that you have a problem with the findings of the AG, and yet you have three statements by the board, forgot the other two, that are concurring with the AG's report, but still you would not act on the findings of the AG. We'll still sit here next year and talk about money that is vanishing through irregular expenditure in SANRAL, and nothing happens to no one. Going to the next chairperson, the Auditor General says in sentence 33, I draw attention to the following engagements that could potentially impact on the public entity's financial performance and compliance-related matters. So SANRAL might have problems with finances in the near future, because you do not want to adhere to anything. Is that correct?
Paragraph 33. Driving down the highways of Gauteng.
Okay. So Chairperson, the paragraph 33 relates to the investigation.
We're still with SANRAL. I'm trying to be soft on them. Because this is their annual report, which you also signed as the minister. They should know the content. So we should not be wasting time with them trying to understand what is here.
Chairperson, the Honourable Member, the paragraph 33 relates to the investigation conducted and still outstanding by the Office of the Public Protector with regard to the e-tolling contract. So we have not, as an organization, received any update or the report from the Office Public Protector. Yeah, 33 relates to paragraph 32, if you remember. It says, I draw attention to the following engagements, which is related to item 34. We can also ask the Auditor General to confirm that, if you may allow that, in terms of our
on a point. Can the Chair answer questions and stop wanting to run the meeting himself? Can he focus on answering questions or focus on you, sir? Don't tell us what to do here.
All right.
Because if you want us to do that, we would have loved to come to your institution. This is not your institution. We've got our own chairperson. We warned you last time.
All right, no, that's fine. That's okay. I think I take your point. Let's continue. If at some point the Auditor General would want to confirm anything, they will be free to do so. Just draw the mic closer to you.
Chair, paragraph 33 refers to paragraph 34 and 35.
34 and...
Chair,
yeah.
Can you allow us to use our own capacity? we'll come to the Auditor General, as we always do that, after we're finished. We know what is happening here. We can't be told by the chairperson. If you can answer questions, we'll teach him how to answer questions. We know what is going on in this report. We don't want to be guided by the Auditor General. So we return and we know what we have seen here. If the member is finished, allow us to ask questions. Don't allow the Auditor General to spoon feed us. It's a bad precedent.
All right. Yes, Comrade, continue.
Okay, Chairperson. Sentence 33 talks to the public entity's financial performance, which could be impacted by their attitude. And it makes reference to this case of the e-tolls, which is within the public protector, but the very same practice is continuing. I don't know whether I'm understanding English other way around. The other reports that the AG is referring to here is this one. And the impact of what we've talked about from 32 backwards has caused what is on 33 and the case of the e-tolls, which is within the PP. Their attitude is not changing. And within the case of the PP, there is maladministration and everything else on their investigation. And within that maladministration, on its own, it's not explained on this one. I just forgot the page where it's explained broadly why is this case at the PP. There is no criminal case opened by SANRAL. There is no disciplinary case opened by SANRAL. They are sitting since 2012. And these are some of the irregularities, simply because they are not on this particular irregular expenditure. They were in 2012. If you want us to draw back, we can go all the way back and show you all the maladministrations, irregular expenditures, fruitless and wasteful expenditure of SANRAL. It's because of the attitude they have.
Chair, can you allow me to put that in context?
Right.
I think when you refer to paragraph 34 with the public protector, that was done at the instance of the board and senior management of SANRAL. That all the issues surrounding the e-toll contract and etc. SANRAL took the initiative and approached the Office of the Public Protector to conduct that investigation so you could get an independent view in terms of all these allegations that were, and so-called, let me use a better word, not noise, but all the allegations that were in the new media and etc. that were leveled towards the organization. So it was our own, it was SANRAL's own initiative.
What did you ask the Public Protector to investigate? Just in a little bit of detail.
Yes, the CFO is just reminding me, which I can make a copy available to yourself, but it was to review the entire procurement and the contract with regard to the awarding of the entire e-toll construction process with farm construction to the allied support.
How far is the public protector in that investigation?
Chair, I don't have an update myself. Let me, if I can just check with the Office of the Acting CEO.
This paragraph relies specifically, we've been asking the public protector to give us an update, and she hasn't, at that stage and at year end, there wasn't any new developments, and that's exactly what the AG is reporting. They also asked the public protector.
But are you
for
putting enough pressure? I mean, state capture was done within 12 months, and this has been on for years, and there seem to be no answer, no progress.
Chair, we've tried and we have had no confirmation of that, and possibly if it's within your mandate as the chair, we'd ask your assistance to also try and ascertain as to the status, which would help us. It also puts the members of the committee there, but we've tried as management, and we're welcome to provide the necessary proof to you. Excuse me? No, if you can, sometimes it helps, sir. I'm not sure. But I'm
okay.
Just.
All right.
And I'm not sure the mandate. Thank
yeah.
you.
All right. No, that's fine. It is of interest to us to the extent that it talks to procurement. procurement process is followed, the financial implications, and all the other things around that process. Yes, continue.
Chairperson, now I have a problem with a board that's tiptoeing around the officials which are committing crime. What sentence 34 talks to is exactly what is happening now. You tiptoed around these people until someone says something and then some action will be taken. You are actually indicating there's a Moody's review on SANRAL, which was supposed to have been taking place in June. Where are we with that Moody's review?
So SANRAL is subject to ratings that follow in terms of the national ratings from there, but we had the future growth, and if you may allow me, the CFO has just been through a roadshow with the investors and she can give you more precise details. We haven't had the board meetings in terms of feedback from her, but if you allow me, she'll be able to give you the latest details.
Now, what I need is you indicated that the Moody's review have put you, the rating have put you on the negative.
Yes.
And by June it will be reviewed. Are you now on the negative or are you on the positive? Are we looking at liquidation or are we safe?
No, we're not looking at liquidation. That's why I wanted to also reassure the committee that the CFO coming from the latest investor roadshow would give you comfort.
Now I don't need any more elaboration because there is a going concern on the Gauteng road infrastructure and everything. And on that going concern, you are indicating that you only have money to cover for 12 months. You do have money to cover 12 months. And what's going to happen beyond that? Because you are tiptoeing around people. People are getting away with money. Now you do not have money to deal with major infrastructure. There is a going concern from the AG. It's on the 2014 audit report. It's on the 2016 audit report. And it's still ongoing. And there is a Moody's review. Where is SANRAL?
So, Chairperson, yes, the going concern is a concern to us in terms of the ability to recover the outstanding amount of money on the GFIP tolling. We can confirm that the latest investor roadshow, the bondholders are comfortable in terms of being able to support SANRAL, and we do have cash, our cash flows, and our bonds have been able to roll forward at least for the next 12 months. Which in period of time we hope that our efforts in terms of national government policy, in terms of being able to implement the next step with regard to the outstanding monies, would then help our cash flow.
Chair, the reason why I'm doing this, I'm trying to illustrate to the committee how careless SANRAL plays with money. And on page 200, in terms of the irregular expenditure, there is an indication that there is money not condoned by Treasury. Why did Treasury not condone that money?
National Treasury has not reverted back to us with our application for condoning. We have sent it to them in writing as well. And we're just still waiting National Treasury to confirm, either in negative or positive, whether they're going to condone the irregular expenditure to park is the routine road maintenance as well.
Now, Chairperson, you are playing with English. Less amounts recoverable, not condoned. Less amounts not recoverable, second sentence not condoned. Then the third sentence says irregular expenditure awaiting condonation. So which is which? There is one awaiting, it's clearly identified, awaiting. The others are saying not condoned.
Those ones that relate to not condoned is where we submitted a reapplication to National Treasury for reconsideration.
Maybe. Maybe submitted.
No, it has been submitted. So we're still waiting for National Treasury. We resubmitted a further application for their consideration to condone.
But so you have resubmitted.
Yes.
What happened to your first submission?
It was rejected. That's why they resubmitted.
It was rejected, correct.
Can you now concur with us that you are playing with public funds? That's why Treasury says I cannot be responsible for your carelessness.
I don't think it's fair, Chair, for us to admit that we're playing with public funds. I don't think that's what we are doing. We take our position, we take our responsibility very seriously, and we would definitely not be would not abuse taxpayers' money as board members.
I think you need to go back and read again your annual report. You're also indicating in your very same annual report that National Treasury, Minister of Finance, has not approved deviation.
Which page?
It's, where is it now? 132. Minister of Finance has not approved deviation.
Which paragraph?
On page 132,
yep.
Paragraph 27, it's called procurement and contract management.
All right.
On the last line there, they've
right.
never seen any, they don't have any
okay.
acceptance what the finance minister is saying.
All right. Continue, comrade. Yes. You're referring to that paragraph.
So, Minister of Finance has not approved deviations. And yet you are still continuing. You will continue with your practice, you will continue with everything, you will continue with tiptoeing. So what must we do? Should we still continue, give Department of Transport money, and Department of Transport must give you money?
If you're relating specifically to paragraph 27 and with regard to the Minister of Finance, that relates as well to the routine road maintenance. Irregular expenditure. It doesn't relate to anything else.
That is the ones that you submitted and were rejected, and you have made a resubmission. All right. Okay. All right. Yes, comrades.
Minister of Finance does not approve. They reject. What is going to happen?
Sir, I don't understand.
The Minister of Finance does not approve. Treasury rejects condonation. Now you resubmitted. If they reject again, what's going to happen?
At that time, I think that your board will take that under consideration and then decide on the appropriate action as to what alternatives are available to SANRAL. At this point in time, it will be a board discussion.
Okay, my last question, which is also in illustration, will be on the forensic investigation on a member which did not disclose matters of interest. And in the last meeting, my colleague, I think it was Comrade Vincent, asked you, why did you refer the matter for forensic investigation when you know that the member did not disclose the matters of interest? you're still continuing with forensic investigation that must be paid by the department, and you know for a fact that a member did not disclose. Are you still continuing?
The purpose of conducting the investigation was when management was made aware of the contravention by the employee, we wanted to ensure that the findings of the Auditor General were conclusive, and for us to be able to then ensure that we arrive a disciplinary process with the sufficient information, we had to conclude that, and in addition to that, and identify the other parties, so we can also confirm that currently our legal component is considering the legal options as to also blacklisting or mark, forgive me for my word, but also to be able to find a way to penalize the supplier, because our investigation has found that there's been collusion between the supplier and the employee. So I think the basis, Honorable Member, of conducting the investigation was to ensure that it was conclusive and also identify all the contracts that the said employee oversaw in terms of his relationship.
So that has been done?
Yes.
And then what?
Currently, the disciplinary process is underway, and further from there, we're then going to institute the relevant criminal action. And like I said earlier, is that we're waiting for the final legal opinion from our internal legal team as to what action we can take against the supplier. Because we are pretty confident, based on previous discussions, that we can blacklist the supplier from Sandra's database and also report to said supplier to National Treasury in terms of the national procurement legislation.
And the 1.2 million
rounding up
that has been spent there, who's going to be responsible for it?
Yeah, the comrade is rounding up, and then we'll then come to you, comrade. Yeah, just continue, comrade.
And the 1.2 million, who's going to be responsible for it? We need to recover that money.
That process will undertake further from the criminal action against the said employee and the supplier. So once the disciplinary process is completed, then the relevant criminal and civil action will then be implemented between the employee and file. And once legal advises us as to whether we can also take the appropriate civil action against the supplier, but that money will be recovered from both sides, from both the parties or either one of them.
Okay, thank you, Chair.
All right. Before I hand over to comrades, let me see, Comrade Boy, Comrade Kikane, everybody. All right, Chair. I see every comrade wants to. Just before I hand over to Comrade Boy, Chair, I think on this very one of conflict of interest, because when I went through the list that you submitted and some of the information that we briefly discussed before we started, we indeed have an interest in cases that have a criminal element, and that is why the Hawks are here. We think that your disciplinary process and your civil action and the criminal investigation can all go parallel together. I don't think there's need for one to wait for the other. We would want the engagement with law enforcement should and can actually start at this level, because then you have the leadership of the Hawks, so you don't have to go to a police station and get some constable to take it up. Then you're guaranteed that the top brass will be there to ensure that it is followed up and there is no stalling. So we would want that, and we'll record it from our side, that it is a case that we may need to ensure that you take it up with the Hawks. We have done so in a number of instances, and
unfortunately, so far, in all instances, with the concurrence of the departments and the entities. So we would want to say, this one, let's give it to them, they do an inquiry and check, and then once things are conclusively sorted out, then we'll know, we'll hear from you or from them that, well, this is what we found out and this is what we're doing. Right? Can we leave it at that? Can we leave it at that?
Yes, Chair, thank you very much. We would liaise with the representative from the Hawks and take that forward. Thank you for that.
Okay. No, that's fine. All right, comrades, comrade Boy.
Let's go to your statement in page 125, sir. Just to talk about the blind leading the blind. It seems to be no honesty in the processes that they're talking to us about. On top there is page 3. I'm just talking to your statement. All substantive, you have got a hotline there, sir. And in that hotline, you have got a lot of allegations that have been made by the public, 68. And all of them were investigated and action taken as appropriate. That's what they are saying to us. That's why you couldn't even see the stuff. You are contradicting yourself in a way. Because what you are saying in this report is not what they are telling us through your written report. It's page 125, sir. You can see it. You see what does it mean there? That you have so many cases on hotline. You investigated and you're happy after the results. No hawks were being involved, no police were being involved, no disciplinary actions as provided. Ma'am, can you behave? You can do that in your house, not inside here. I'm talking to him. If you want to behave in that way, I'll allow you to ask my questions.
All right.
Yes, okay. Please. You see, and when you go forward, so you say, during the period under review, SANRAL, and you finish that sentence, the review comes, SANRAL is happy to confirm that none of its staff members were found to be involved in such activities. This is what you are telling us. Now, how do we believe you today? When the Auditor General provides us with the evidence. And I can take you back to page 132 at number 26. Can you go there, sir? Well, I'll help you to read the report. At 26, it says a person in the service of the public entity, and you go on there. So it's quite clear that when it was SANRAL and its board, things were honky-dory, staff was smiling. Nothing was fine, just anything wrong and contradictory. That's what your statement is saying. That's what you are making us to believe today, that you were identified. But I'm saying to you, on your hotline report, nothing has ever been provided. You are quite happy about that report. But as you go down there, even you are saying in that report that the staff is so happy, and now you go on and on. And how you keep each other, even after forensic report. That's how you conclude your matter then. No investigation is being done. And no reference is being done to any other institution or internal. But I still want to show you that even in what your risk is telling us and how she is defining themselves, that's why your internal controls are not working. Besides outsourcing of what you confronted with. I'll take you to page, but I just wanted to show you so that we read your reports. We don't report them and put them on top of the table as flowers. You see, if you go to page 127, your own internal audit report, if you look at that, at your own results and every evaluation, nothing has ever been found wrong by your own internal audit. They've been very happy. Everything has been going smooth. That's why at the point where the Auditor General comes in, then all these problems that you don't have internal audit start coming up. that your internal controls are very weak, sir. You know, the day we left here, sir, just for record purposes, I read about your profile in leadership. I found it in my pigeonhole. It talks about you specifically and how long you have been here and how much work you understand. So I've read your profile. I understand that you're supposed to assist us to give us answers here, besides that team of people. That's why I've got interest in your report, to see how much have you been able to build an institution that will be of value to South Africans. If your internal audit doesn't work, even your risk committee doesn't provide us with good evidence of being able to be confident of the institution, that's why you've got a problem with the credit rating. You've got a problem with credit rating because your performance is very low as an institution. The members alluded to it. I can direct you to the page and we can read it together. So that is on page 123. That's where the member was referring you to. The credit rating. And what are the issues that are related to credit rating there? What is happening in Sanral? It's worse when the Minister of Finance is not going along with you. It means that you don't care about any other. Because when you deal with legislations, you don't relate to legislation. But you do have where you are supposed to be guided by compliance. And you don't comply with the law, sir, from such a highly educated person like you. What is the problem with Sanral?
All right. I think, what was the first page that you, 125?
I referred him to the hotline.
Yeah, is there a contradiction between those two paragraphs? Because the first paragraph says there were so many cases reported, we investigated, we took appropriate action. The second paragraph says things were reported, we investigated, we found nothing. Are we misunderstanding these two paragraphs, or are they referring to two different things?
No, Chair, they refer to the same thing. And thank you to the Honourable Member for pointing that out. The first issue that it relates to is all the matters that have been received on the tip-off anonymous hotline that we have. So every item that comes in based on a report is investigated internally by our chief risk officer. If there's any merit in terms of further investigation, it's given to the internal auditor or to the forensic investigators to investigate. I cannot recollect, and you've got to forgive me for that, in terms of each of the 68 matters as to which one would have warranted further investigation and if there was any action taken. But if it does satisfy the committee for the 2016 year, we're happy to supply the supply the entire list of all the items that had come through from TIPOS with the investigation and the work was done and the final results.
Okay.
That will give you. But my apologies, because it'd be unfair, and I don't want to say something that I can't remember in terms of the exact details of that. I'm not sure the chair of ARC, if you may permit, if she does recollect, but I think to satisfy the committee in terms of its completeness, we're happy to provide that entire schedule to the committee.
Mr. Kali, can you note that down? Yes, we'd want to get that schedule of the 68, what was involved, all the details, I think, in the same manner as the spreadsheet, what was the final conclusion after the investigation, then at least we'd have a full picture.
Thank you, Chair. The Honourable Member then refers to the internal audit function. The internal audit function for the 2016 year was outsourced to two firms. The first one was Ernst & Young and AJ Cupano. And during the latter part of 2016, a new tender was then awarded to a business innovation group called BIG. And they ran it totally independent. I hear the concern raised by the Honourable Member in terms of the issues that have come through from the Auditor General, and yet the internal auditors do not reply anything on that. I'm unable to comment on the work that's done by the internal audit, except to say that there is an internal audit plan that's approved by the Audit and Risk Committee and the Board annually.
Right. No, let's, no, 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 let's. Yeah.
So let's go to page 125. I'm always good at reading for you. It says the Audit and Risk Committee and ultimately the full board have final oversight responsibility independent of management for information provided in the annual report, including financial and performance reporting. SANRAL's board and management team acknowledge the value of combined assurance as a means of ensuring that there are effective controls in the reporting process. Now, what are you telling us when your annual report is saying what you are saying to us? Don't contradict yourself, sir, please. But this is what you have written. I'm reading what you have told us here. It's in the report. I'm not thumbs-upping my approach. What does that mean? What does it imply to what I'm saying? Because the Auditor General statements comes later. This is what you have told us. And I have to believe you. I can't believe somebody else. Because you are talking on behalf of everybody here.
Yeah, outside of the Auditor General findings, I can commit to the committee that the internal audit and the control measures at SANRAL do operate effectively. I'm not saying, save for the findings that have been reported to by the Auditor General, our control measures are of extremely high quality. We have a very vigorous internal control system, and we have a very vigorous risk manager as well. So I note the comment, Chair, by the Honourable Member.
Okay. Personal comeback.
All right. No, Chair, I'll leave you to go. But I just wanted you, sir, to understand that what you're saying is contradicting what we have here. I've understood that how your internal audit is structured. You don't relate to it. It's all outsourced. Even currently, it's outsourced. How do you accepting what the internal audit and what the risk committee is saying, you want us to believe that cost? But these things are money, they are not about you. This internal audit, never have you ever had this internal audit just being prescribed by the law, creating it on yourself. You have been outsourcing it since, even the current one, you've been outsourcing it. Which one are you owing up to when it comes to internal auditing and risk management? Because in that statement, you're saying that you accept full responsibility. But what I read in the internal audit on page 127, these are all institutions that have been asked to do the processes for you, and even for that committee member that claims that she's responsible.
Yeah, we do have full confidence in our internal audit function.
I think the point here is we would want you to have an internal audit of SANRAL employees, build internal capacity, and not outsource. If it is outsourced, it must be a transient thing, not a permanent thing. SANRAL is a state entity, And I'm listening. I want that at the end of this engagement, I must be convinced that you actually see yourself as a public entity, not as some private enterprise out there, totally out of sync with our desire to have a capable state. A state that has its own internal capacity to run its affairs. We don't take kindly to departments and entities coming here and saying we've outsourced this, we've outsourced that. So you may be happy with them, it's fine, but it must be a transient thing. It can't be a permanent thing. Because this is a public entity, and we cannot outsource its functions. We must build internal capacity. I think that's the point that is making, and it is our common point. You have to make peace with that because you find it unacceptable. Absolutely and totally unacceptable. You need to build internal capacity.
No, thank you, Chair. I think I don't want to just simply say note.
but we'll work towards that and provide the appropriate feedback to the committee. Thank you for that.
Committee, then?
No, thanks, Chair. No, I just want us to look at the schedule that you provided. Because in your letter to the chair, a letter to the DG dated the 4th, 7th, 30th, the last paragraph, on the same issue, you are saying, should exemption not be granted, we will be forced to cancel our program and ultimately leave some 400 SMMEs without work. The objective is to promote the development of SMMEs who are able to provide a service at a price that optimizes value to both that is parties. Now, looking at the schedule that you have provided, that is to us, you have, for instance, let's look at Subway Construction Property Limited. Come again? Schedule.
Yeah, is it the first page, sir?
Yes, on the first page. And if you are saying you are empowering other companies, are you aware that for that company only, you allocated 1.3 that is billion rand. Is that empowerment? Because you look at how many contracts you gave to that company. Yes. Will that be empowerment?
Yes. No, thank you for that. I think just to add context to that, that 80%, in terms of these contracts, 80% of the work that's awarded to the main company, which is Superway Construction, and if you look at the next column, which is subcontractors, 80% of the value of the work has to be allocated, awarded to subcontractors. So if you look across all these subcontractors, Superway, they're all SMMEs, and they're all different SMMEs.
No, I'm fully aware.
Yes.
I'm looking at the main contractors.
Yes.
Yes. Not the subcontractors at this stage.
So the main contractors only have 20% of the contract for themselves, and in that way we're ensuring that by 80% of the value of the contract is awarded to SMMEs was a manner of ensuring that you had the development of SMMEs in the construction sector.
So that relates to all the main contractors here?
Yes. So every company within the RM, within Section 1, at the main contractors, and 80% has to go to all the subcontractors, which we detail in the third column.
What is your consideration? Is it about splitting the money, or is it about splitting the work?
It's actually both, Chair. The actual contract manager from a technical side, I can ask the acting CEO to help me, who is a qualified civil engineer. But in terms of the mandate, and our understanding is that it's driven by the allocation of work, but guided by the value. So we want to also ensure that
What I'm trying to understand is that when you awarded a contract to this main contractor, you look at the work and say there are certain aspects of the work that you can give to SFISO as long as he has a wheelbarrow and a shovel. But then there's other aspects of the work that is too technical and professional that requires a professional company that you have awarded. So out of that work, they should retain 20% of the total value, and the other value, they should share it. Or are you merely saying we award one company, and instead of employing SMMEs, we outsource the employment of SMMEs to this big company? It will do that for us. We give them the contract, and they can go and look for SMMEs just to ensure that we have distributed the work to SMMEs.
Chair, will you allow me to ask the acting CEO to
Thank you. Yeah.
As you clarify, sir, would you go to page 132, procurement and contract management. As you do all this work, you don't advertise it. So is it just done by the board's criteria? Because it says on 25, invitation for competitive bidding. We're not always advertised. In at least the government tender bulletin is required by Treasury regulation.
All right.
Just how do you come to all this work that you're talking about?
Jay, on the first question, the main contractor, or is basically a management contractor. And as you are aware of that, one can't do set-asides. And to help the smaller contractors to get work, specifically this work, that is where the whole model of the routine road maintenance contract is coming from, is to set this work aside within the contract for the smaller contractors where they can, but it's still put out on tender. And there's no big contractors that can come in and compete against them in this category. So it is really to help the smaller contractors to get the work to do it. But it is still on a competitive basis. The main contractor would tender a provision, and then the smaller contractors are then going through a tender process wherein they then compete for that work. And there's different categories of work, and the 20% that is going to the main contractor is mainly mainly management, and the other work that he may do or may want to do is obviously to make it more lucrative to get people that will be able to do this management contract. Otherwise, there's no incentive for them. Thank you.
Yeah, no. Just noted. I want to let Comrade Kekane finish. I'm coming.
Okay. Is this Superway Construction a national organization? Where, or maybe let me rephrase my question. Where are they operating? In which province are they operating?
Sure, I don't know. I'm not sure if anybody in the team knows that.
Most of the main contractors, as well as the SMMEs participating, is in a way regionally based. And the Superway is normally, they when they were still in business, they're not in business any longer, they were operating around Gauteng and maybe Free State, but mainly from Gauteng. If you then look at the Cape, you will find other main contractors or management contractors tendering there.
Okay. I think it makes sense. Because if you look at the second column, of the same company, Superway Construction, you said the second column is the subcontractors. Look at Subway. That is Superway. They've awarded contracts to Babure, that is the subcontract. And you look at 1, 2, 3. Just on page 1. Hence my question is, how are they operating? Are they operating on a regional basis or what?
I think mainly they do. The main contractors are, one will find different main contractors in different regions, certainly with the SMMEs, which are basically, most of them are regional or local. You won't easily find SMME tendering for work in Gauteng, or also tendering in the Cape. So it is mainly regionally based, and also a good thing in a sense that one have this sort of program nationally.
Chair, if I may intervene, I think if it may suit the member, we're happy, given some time, to be able to then provide that additional information. Mm-hmm. So we could tell you, it means us going down to each regional office, but we could come back and enhance the spreadsheet to tell you specifically in which region or which province the main contract and the subcontractors are. If the committee so desires that, but we'll require a few weeks.
to be able to pull out that information, but we're welcome to give that to you.
No, I definitely need that information. Because if you check, they were awarded on the same day. Because if you look at your spreadsheet, the first column, it says date of award. You see? And obviously you need to clarify as to if they were awarded on the same day, is this a national program or a regional or a provincial program? Because the same people are empowered here, and you spoke about 400 companies that is subcontractors. Now one is worried. If one subcontractor is benefiting, and what about the 400 that you indicated earlier on? But if you are going to provide me with information, obviously that can clarify that is that area.
Yeah, because I think, comrades, on that page one, superhighway, yes, on the same day gets 3 contracts.
Yes. Now, if you look at the whole spreadsheet, because I did some calculations, that is mid-frame, it has got 30. Penny Fathering Engineering, 15. This superway, 10.
11.
Okay, 11. Those are the issues that we need clarity. Because if we talk empowerment, obviously you need to spread, that is, the appointment of these companies. The other issue relates to the issue that my colleague has raised. My colleague has raised on the conflict of interest. I have seen a letter written to the chair, but my question is this person still in the employ of the company?
Your Honour, to confirm the internal process, whether the disciplinary process has started.
Thanks, Board Chair. With your permission, Chair, yes, the employee is still in the employ of the Sandra. May I add, with your permission, Chair, that on realizing the 3 matters that have been brought to your attention, we felt that we need to do a further and thorough investigation to establish whether could there be other awards that the employee might have made, hence the forensic investigation.
All right. Okay. You are confirming that he's still in the employ of the company. And what is the status of the contract? Is the contract still continuing?
What we've done is, in terms of the treasury practice notes, we are required to give the affected contractor a notice of intention to bar. So this is what we've done. The effect of that is we have to follow due process, and that would include giving them a right of reply, and based on what they bring back to us, we exercise our options in terms of the treasury prescripts. One would include barring them and having them reported to the National Treasury, and also cancelling the contract and recovering damages.
Okay. But you're not answering my question. My question is, what is the status of the contract? Is the contract still continuing? That's the question that I asked.
The contract is still continuing, sir.
That's fine. That's fine. Leave it at that.
Yes.
The justification will come as further questions arise, so we can clarify and give context.
Okay. The other interest that I might have is the directors of all those companies listed in this schedule, particularly the main contractors. Is it possible for you to provide that information?
Okay. Just to confirm, the Honourable Member wants the directors of the main company and the subcontractors?
No.
Just the main?
Yes.
Just the main?
Yes.
I think we'll need to just be very clear as to at what date. I think we can try to extract that.
Now, the chairperson is a specialist on that.
Okay.
Don't worry. He will deal with that part.
Towards the end, he will clearly give direction as to the information that we requested.
Okay.
We need to get that information by when. He will do that. The other issue on the same issue of the directors. Please just indicate to us whether is it a JV or it is a standalone company.
Want you to round off so I can move and then come back. Not the end.
Now, because I'm in trouble, the last issue is just of interest. On the issue of, on the 15th of April 2016, you issued summons to the Gauteng, that is local division in Pretoria, on the collision of companies. Construction companies. Well, what is the progress? Let me assist you. The loss was 760 million.
Where is that?
It is in the report. I've been trying to check on my preparation.
Okay.
I'll check and come back to you.
I can.
It is in the report.
Yes. Now I can't provide clarity. I think it's and. With the permission of the chair, the minister has also been a party to that. The said amount of 700 odd million rand has been contributed as part of an agreement with national government, national treasury, and the Department of Trade and Industry, and that the funds are going to be paid to the state revenue fund. So we have a signed agreement that's been signed, to which our Honorable Minister of Transport is a signatory. So that matter, what Sandra instituted, has been confirmed that money is payable in terms of the agreement that's been reached between the company and the national government.
What had happened?
Chair, let's request the minister to respond because the chair is not answering the question. The question is, what is the progress? I'm not asking you as to what are you going to do with the money.
Thank you, Chairperson, and thank you, Honourable Member, for the question. The Minister of Transport is part of the Presidential Infrastructure Coordinating Commission, which is chaired by the President, and it has a MENCOM, which is the Management Committee chaired by the Minister for Rural Development and Land Reform, Minister Nkwinti, as well as the Secretariat under Minister Patel. Out of the PICC, there was a subcommittee established in 2013 constituted by the Minister of Public Works, Minister of Transport, as well as the Minister of Rural Development and Minister of Economic Development. We were driven in the process by the Minister of Economic Development. We have arrived at the point where we have been engaging with the companies that were implicated in the collusion or the serious irregularities, and arrived at the point where we agreed through a cabinet decision that we've come up with a package in which all the implicated, except the City of Cape Town, all the implicated departments or entities would then negotiate as one. And that is what we have arrived at. We've signed the agreement now in October, which the chairperson was referring to, where we have now concluded to say SANRAL would not go alone in terms of following the litigation on this particular company, and that is the level at which we are. And to be honest, in fact, SANRAL was responsible for delaying the final conclusion of the agreement because they wanted a guarantee from National Treasury that they would not be found on the wrong if anything. So in terms of their fiduciary responsibilities, they carried it out, and we are at the level at which now the agreement, like he indicated, the resources would then be plowed into the National Revenue Fund as intended to benefit emerging as well as the previously disadvantaged construction industry. Thank you very much, Chairperson.
All right. Chair, can I maybe
a follow-up to the minister. Does it mean that we have withdrawn that is these summons? Because these summons were that is submitted to that is a court of law in Gauteng on the 15th of April. All what I need to know is the progress that is thereafter. Did we withdraw them or what?
I think they are able to respond to that because we've been communicating and they needed to have actually effected the processes that would now actually dovetail into this national one. So I think the chair or the CFO can respond to that one.
Chair, thank you. Thank you, Minister. Yes, I think the essence of the summons have been withdrawn because there's been an out-of-court settlement in terms of the payment of X amount of money to the State Revenue Fund.
How was the settlement reached? What were your original demands based on what vis-a-vis the final settlement?
So SANDA had undertaken a complete independent process to ascertain the cost of the collusion in terms of the different
cost
projects.
Of the, I think let's use the usual one, the cost of the corruption. Because it's like if it's a civil servant, it's corruption. If it's big companies, it's collusion. The extent of the corruption.
Okay, so the extent of the corruption, in the words of the chair, amounted to approximately 750 million rand. My apologies, 762 million rand, which we can confirm the entire 762 million. Yes, I think subject to correction, which is there, that the my understanding is that the entire amount of the claim is going to be payable. But the minister can confirm that in terms of that.
Chair, it's if I caught you by surprise. Okay, can you do us a big favor? Please investigate all this, because we need information on the 760 million.
I think we can do even better, Chair, by the office of the minister, then give you confirmation in terms of that exact amount that she has.
No, that's fine. I think the point here is when departments come to us and we have cases of individuals who have done wrong, we always say we want those people to be charged criminally. But we are averse to this tendency of lenience when it comes to the corruption of big business. See, we are very averse to that, very, very averse to that. So I want that to be underlined. I think the essence of this question was basically to see, because it is one thing for people to have through corrupt practices created a particular loss. It is quite another for them to then be punished for that financially. So, yeah, I'll give you, but I don't want to belabor the point. I want to go to other comrades so we can move.
Thank you, Chair. We'll provide that. But just to inform the committee that SANDA was the only affected organization that had taken that process court action to the extent
which other parties were affected that did not take any action?
There's been various other entities and organs of state.
Like?
I'm not sure who they are, but I can tell you.
You have forgotten.
So whoever was involved in the stadium construction, which included provincial government and national government, but SANDA was the first state-owned entity that had taken the process. In terms of conducting that, and the minister can also confirm that.
All right. I want to go to Sengwa. Yes.
Mine was that we are dealing with irregular expenditures, which means you couldn't do your work properly. That's all we wanted to remind. As you keep on asking for extension, I don't hope you do understand that we don't even have you as an entity only. We've got 100 other entities to attend to. If you are not prepared, we just have to take everything to the Hawks and get clarity that how do you come to such big amount on the expense of the taxpayers. It's not your money. It's their money.
All right. Sengwa?
Thank you very much, Chair. How much are you paying for these outsourced internal auditors?
I don't have the exact amount, but I'll check with the CFO.
Thanks, Chair. They tender tariffs per hour, depending on the level of work that they do. But on average, it's about between 15 to 20 million per year. So it is a tendered rate per hour.
Yes. Is there any skills transfer that is taking place with taxpayers footing 20 million rand or the year? Any skills transfer to the institution?
No, I don't think there's, just to confirm, there's no direct, because it's not a co-sourcing arrangement. So we've noted the comments of the chairperson earlier in terms of establishment. So there isn't a...
Chair, why I'm asking this. Item 24 on page 132. The financial statements submitted for auditing were not prepared in accordance with the prescribed financial reporting framework as required by Section 55(1) of the PFMA and Section 21A of the Companies Act. Material misstatements pertaining to the following account balances, and then it continues to list them. So I want to find out the extent of the interaction between these internal auditors and these financial statements. Paying them 20 million rands, you're presenting financial statements which are not in accordance with the prescribed reporting format. What role do they play in that?
We don't. The internal audit is based on a risk-based auditing of the entire organisation. In terms of financial statements, they're not directly involved in producing financial statements. We do have an advisory capacity, people that assist us with the compiling of the financial statements itself.
Those people. Who are those advisors?
We've got a database of in terms of the procurement process that we have to. Every year ask for prices, but in the last financial year, it was the Lloyds that assisted us.
The external party?
Yeah, so that's, it's, yeah.
Okay. How much are you paying those?
That's less than 500,000, so it's more.
Okay. So these internal auditors, do they get an opportunity to interact with these financial statements?
They are also at the Audit and the Risk Committee meetings where all the financial statements are approved and get taken to the board for approval. So they are, and they also sit inside our offices, so they are interacting with us on a frequent basis.
With financial statements?
Not directly. It's only through the Audit and the Risk Committee where they do see the financial statements that are produced.
And they sort of kind of sign off on that as well?
No, there's no direct sign-off by the internal auditors on that.
I would imagine that the financial statements are a reflection of the entire state of health of an institution, and if you're going to be an auditor, you would want to be privy to the final product of what you have been auditing, whether it's month-on-month, quarter-to-quarter, or year-on-year. And I want to establish the extent of which these external auditors, which we have outsourced, paying 20 million rands, they were party to financial statements that are not within the prescribed framework of reporting. Why I raise that, Chair? Because on page 125, the Audit and Risk Committee has already been raised, and ultimately the full board have final oversight, responsibility, and independent of management for information provided in the annual report, including financial and performance reporting. Now, so the Audit and Risk Committee is here. They've got the final, or they've got a say in the final sign-off on these financial statements. Did they pick up on these material misstatements that have been cited by the AG? Because I want to now probe the extent of the capacity to do the work of the committees in place, including these external factors. I refuse, Chair, to believe that we're going to be paying 20 million rands to outsourced internal auditors who cannot even pick up the most basic of things in statements, and we are submitting statements which are not fit and proper in terms of the law. So did the Audit and Risk Committee pick up on these things?
to the Honourable Member. No, the internal audit is only appointed in terms of risk systems processes. They don't have the function to look at the annual financial statements. That's what the external auditor does, who's the AG. So basically, the great detail in the financial statements is prepared by SANRAL itself with the help of an external auditing company. And so these things were not picked up at the audit and risk.
So, Chair?
They compile the financial statements with the help of an external auditor.
Yes. All right. So, Chair, that paragraph on 125, the audit and risk committee and ultimately the full board have final oversight responsibility, independent of management, for information provided in the annual report, and they are effective, and including financial and performance reporting. The audit and risk committee has that oversight role, responsibility. So if it was not picked up, Chair, here's what I'm getting at. It's not picked up. You've got an audit risk committee which now is absolving themselves. The financial statements are prepared with assistance of another external auditor, less than 500 rands, and I wanted to say that I picked up that it was sort of said it's not a significant amount of money, well, it's public taxpayers' money. Chair, we arrive at all of this because there is an absence of in-house capacity, built-in capacity, to do the most basic of things. That's why all this regular expenditure is there. Because if I want to find out from the Audit and Risk Committee, what issues did you pick up that you presented to the board and said, right, management, board, CFO, whoever, these issues are a problem. Respond to them. Were the responses forthcoming? How does management and board respond to the contributions of the Audit and Risk Committee? Whenever you make any recommendations or any commentary, how do they respond to it?
Yeah, the Audit and Risk Committee picked up many things. The details relating to supply chain assets, etc. But of course, you have to realize when once these financials come to us, it's many months after the financial year that we're reporting on. So we then recommend actions, and as I mentioned earlier, there is a capacity problem within SANRAL, and there do need to be more staff dealing with supply chain, dealing with all these controls, and as you've seen in the latest report, a number of people are being employed to fill those gaps, because that is something that has been of great concern to us.
Why I raise that, initially the CFO said, in the first response she gave, she said, SCM had been strengthened. When the chair of the responded midway through the questions, she said, no, that still needs to be done. So that's why I'm raising it, but I'm going to move on. My final issue, Chair, is on page 202. On page 202, you have halfway through, just above 31 March 2015, tenders advertised for less than 21 days. Now, I want to find out, Chair, how do you even begin to process a tender that you know that has not been advertised within the prescribed time? I'm just wanting to understand the tender processing. You've got those tenders there. And if I may actually extend, Chair, just above that, quotations not invited. In instances, the minimum of 3 quotations are not invited for contracts and so on. You go to the bottom, an amount was spent without obtaining quotations as required. Surely all these things should sound some sort of alarm somewhere. that you need the internal capacity to be able to deal with these things. Because as far as I'm concerned, these things are a dereliction of duty. It's just a by the way, because if you begin considering 1 rand as insignificant, or 500,000 as insignificant, you build in a culture whereby you overlook certain things because you attach insignificance to them. These are taxpayers' money. Whether you are paying an external auditor to assist you, or an external to assist you prepare your financials, you cannot have at any point say, well, it was 500,000, therefore it's acceptable. Every cent counts. I always make the example, Chair, to say, if you arrive at an airport to take a plane, if you are late, the plane will leave you. Even if you are late by 1 minute, that 1 minute counts. So the situation here where due process is applied, as we've already established, within the prescripts of practice and not the law. And that is the problem. So, Chair, I raise these things to underscore the point you made in practical terms, to say the absence of internal controls and internal capacity to do these things. Because I don't even have a guarantee whether these people who are paying 20 million rand, if they're charging a tariff by the hour, whether we are getting value for money out of it. If it's in the final analysis, these are the kind of things that we have, because they assist with other things as well. So, Chair, I want to underscore that the recommendation be made that SANRO, as a matter of urgency and priority, looks at the issue of ensuring that they do not outsource what is supposed to be internal, because then it no longer is internal. Thank you, Chair.
Right. Rose, and then I'll come to you.
I'm lost.
No, you're fine. Continue.
Can I go now?
Yeah.
Okay. Chair, thank you. I know that my comrade Ross and I have done a lot of homework, so we've got a lot to ask about, but I'd like to just dovetail with what my other colleagues, my other comrades here have done. And comrade Kakana went into a lot of that list. Excel spreadsheet. Sorry, I'm looking through the hawks at you. I hope I won't be looking through the bars at you. I'm looking through you through the hawks at the moment. But are you aware of the fact that there are 11 SMMEs on that list that don't appear to exist on CRPC or on the internet? And I will list them for you so you can do your homework. Makavosi, Transports and Civils, not in CRPC. Black Baklawa, BACLAWA. CDA Paving, DR Civils, Expector, Gundlungwana, Jailpex, that's JAYLPEX, Pertu Litter, Pertu, PHETU, THU, sorry, and then Litter, LITTER, Three Way Civils, Solomon's Mowing, as in mowing lawn, mowing, and then Onela Litter, that's O-N-E-L-A and then Litter. Now, these 11 SMMEs do not exist in CRPC, and have no internet presence anyway. So obviously that is extremely concerning, that they're on your list of people who have been granted contracts. So I would certainly argue that unless you can come up with a really credible explanation for that, which is either that you haven't given us their registered name, which I think is incredibly unprofessional of you to give us their nicknames, all right? And if it's not the case, I really think that the Hawks should take a notice of those names and see why they've been given contracts. J. Do you want to just have a quick comment on that, or do you want to just take note of it?
Sure, we've noted that, but we'll go back and check the records, because if they're a partnership, or if they were sole proprietors, then they would not appear on the CIPC. But let's go back and seek confirmation as to what details we do have. But we thank you for that observation, which is very important. But
okay, all right. Then moving on to weightier matters. In your presentation, on page 6 of your presentation, and I do apologize for coming late. And sorry, my name is Tim Browderset. I'm a member of the committee. So my apologies, stuck in traffic between the airport and here. I'm advised that this hasn't been broached, and frankly, I'm surprised it hasn't, but I'm grateful for the opportunity. On page 6, to step back for a second, you have based your entire argument in that presentation on the following. You've said, you know what, we don't like following the triple PFA. We prefer the University of Pretoria mathematical model, which tells us who we should appoint. And you have ventured the fairly compelling argument that if you apply the triple PFA strictly and you give it to the lowest bidder, often the lowest bidder is some sort of joker who doesn't really know what they're doing. And you've had bad experience of them walking away. And I come from a road construction background. My family's in road construction. I understand that. But what I find insulting in the industry is that you refer to a model that you're basing your entire argument on. Your entire argument, this whole list of 500 companies and those awards, is based on this model, and you haven't even given it to us and allowed us to take it and test it. So that's question one, number one. Why haven't you provided that to us? Because if I take away that model, or if I can prove that it doesn't work, and I'm going to come to my second point now, your entire argument falls flat. So question number one is, why have you not given us that model so we can test it? Because that's the column on which your entire argument is based. Secondly, why have you not given us an explanation in your spreadsheet saying, line number one, Kikana, Boy, and Gordy were bidders. We decided not to go with Boy because our mathematical model tells us that Kikana was the best guy. That's the kind of explanation I want, because you cannot tell me that in 500 entries, we must just accept, because, Chair, you will know, in those 500 entries, most of them were, the model was applied, everybody's fine, nobody was at fault. 500 times, Abel. I don't believe it. That's the kind of explanation I want. I want detail on every single one of those, why you tell us we didn't follow triple PFA, we followed our model, and why. Give us the reasons. Because this is more than just saying, listen, triple PFA is the law, we don't care. You've got to justify why, because therein lies, my Hawks friends, the criminality. The criminality lies there in that detail. So can you just respond quickly as to why you didn't give us the model, and why we don't have a clear explanation on every single one, why you went with your model and not the legislation, before I get into my next point.
There was no, it wasn't done on purpose not to give the model. I think what was explained there, that the gamma distribution, which is a known statistical distribution, and what this is doing is to take out the outliers. So if there's a group together, it will take the lowest in that group and not take the outlier. And I want to repeat what I said earlier. The problem is, you know, before 2002, when this methodology started, you know, we had many, many SMMEs with, as I say, they can't do it at those prices. Remember that the main contractor tender an allowance, and then that allowance is used for the smaller contractors to tender the work. So if the main contractor just want the work and he tenders very low, then it is obviously impossible for the smaller guys to do it at that price. So it is then taking not the lowest, and I think the statistics is somewhere in that presentation where it is, I think in 27% of the cases it is the lowest, then a certain percentage it is the second one, and then third and above that. But taking in account that in many of these tenders we have more than 20 tenderers, tender for that, so maintainers. So the model is basically to give the smaller contractors who are not that skilled in pricing and not that competitive, to make sure that the main contractor does not tender allowance that is completely irrational.
Okay, Chair, I don't know how you want to go on the road on this, but I still think that the committee needs to be satisfied that every single one of those would apply. Because effectively what you're saying, sir, is that we're not going to follow legislation, we're going to follow our model. And the AG has eventually called you on this.
This was not purposely, you know, not following the rules. You know, it was applied in terms of the triple PFO as just the interpretation of the lowest price. As you said yourself earlier, that it is sometimes very difficult to just in normal evaluation to throw out the lowest bidder. On what basis? It is one of the most, in tender evaluation, it is one of the most difficult things to tell somebody, but you can't do it at those prices. And in this instance, it is slightly lower than the lowest. And the chances that you're going to get much better quality, you know, for that price is also good. Otherwise, if you do it at a very low price, where these guys, they can scarcely do it, but obviously to make it at that price, they will have to cut corners. And I think this model, as I've said, started in 2002, and it was there for 11 years, and it was audited. And it is based on the principle of the triple PFA.
That's fine. I think let's leave it at that. So that we don't go back to justifying it, because it's now behind us. Otherwise, it will go take us back to...
Chair, you're being unfair.
We are not sticking to what you want.
Huh?
Don't justify whether this is an irregular expenditure. It's not what not his money that he's spending. If it was his money, we don't have business with him. This is the taxpayer's money. And what we are saying, we want to have logic to this system, where they even defy the Minister of Finance and all regulations, and they do their own regulations. If you want to say that, President, allow all departments to do it. And then you sit with the chaos in government.
Okay.
If you are giving them that license, give it to everybody. Because everybody will be misleading us like this. And this is what he's doing.
All
right. I mean, it can't be that the Auditor General comes and gives this, I mean, outline of events. And Honorable Tim is quite correct. He is not convincing us. And that's all we wanted. We wanted the basic. And quite clearly what he's telling us here, that he wants a license from us to go all ahead and do as he likes in this part. And in a 1 billion expenditure, come back to us. And you say we must clap hands, Chairperson.
Right.
Please, Chairperson.
All right. That's fine. Me and you are in agreement. That's why I stopped him. I said you must not explain it to us because it is wrong. So there's no point in explaining it because it is wrong. That's what I was saying.
Chair, thank you.
No, I will definitely come back to
I'm
you.
I'm almost finished.
Just, I want him to finish Ross and then it will be you.
Chair, I'm almost finished. Sorry, Comrade Kuno, I'm almost finished.
But Chair, before you continue, can I just respond? The model was given and submitted in the previous submission under cover of a letter.
No, that's fine. That's why I'm saying let's not go back there, because now we have had to stop the model because it led to irregular expenditure. So even if you explain it, why it was done, how it was done, it will not change anything. That's where I was at to say. Let's not go there. Otherwise, we'll just raise debate and argument. Yes.
Chair, I don't want to pursue the matter, but I think we really need to understand, and I don't want to talk about this model, I'm going to go into my next point, but if I tell you that I'm doing it in this, I'm saying I'm spending R1 million over here and I'm ignoring this legislation because I'm using this model, I need to, in order to prove my bona fides, to prove that I've not acted criminally, I need to show you that in this particular instance, I applied the model like this in order for me to show you and the Hawks that I'm actually not using it as smoke and mirrors, and that is why I'm raising this issue. We need a detailed response explaining why X people were chosen, that we can test the model and make sure there is no criminality. That's the purpose of this engagement. Right, but and I've made that point now. Now, may I ask one question? And I really would like a detailed answer on this. If you're using this Pretoria, you say it's called the Degama model. Gamma distribution. How do you spell gamma? Is that G-A-M-A? M-M-A. Gamma. Okay. All right. What's wrong with the CRDB and the CE ratings? That's what's always been used, CRDB and CE ratings, because that will tell you whether or not a person is capable of doing the work or whatever. Why have we just deviated and give tickies this job? Why are we using the CRDB? Can you answer that?
Chair, this has been this specific method has been discussed with the CRDB, and between 2002 and 2013, we didn't know at that point that, you know, this is not following the rules, because at that, you know, we used this different method to determine the lowest. But if we had been sort of fined, if a finding was done against us in 2002, it would have been a completely different story. And I don't want to justify it. We just went on until 2013 when the when we got a finding from Treasury. And not Treasury, the AG. And since then, we wrote two letters to submissions to National Treasury and asked for exemption. And then thereafter, as was explained, we stopped the process. And it took and we phased it out over the 5 years, as has been explained previously.
Okay, thanks. But what I'm trying to clarify is, I understand that you believe that your model was correct in terms of the AG and Treasury. But why was CRDB not used? Do you have a problem with the credibility of CRDB? Do you have credibility issues with CRDB?
We don't have a problem with the CRDB, but the gamma distribution is a specific method to determine an amount. And the CRDB, the CRDB is a body that actually prescribes general conditions of contract for competitive tendering. As the same as you get various suits of competitive tendering in the industry, like FIDIC, COTO, and so on, and CRDB have a specific, and that is why they come into being, to get consistency in the industry, so that not everyone using his own general conditions of contract and tendering method. So hence, that is why they are there. And we, with all our tendering and procurement processes, our procurement is aligned with CIDB. This is the only program where we have done since 2002, used a different method to determine the lowest. And hence, you know, as I explained, you know, in 2013, when we see that we cannot justify it, we stopped with it. But it was phased out over a period because of capacity in the industry.
Okay. See, my understanding of CRDB is you get CE ratings, okay, right up to, I think, of top 111, if I'm not mistaken. Now, CRDB is used to rate construction partners, or people you're going to do work with, so you know. We can't give the construction of a toll highway to a CE1 or a 2 or a 3, because the CE1 is somebody who's going to come and cut the grass on the side of the road. And that is exactly what you are representing that your University of Pretoria model does. So that model does, that mathematical model tells you who to choose for a contract. Why can't you use CRDB for it? That's my exact point. Why did you decide to go and do something else?
Sir, as I've said, the CIDB is prescribing regulation and guidelines for contractors for tendering, and they have a specific suite. They're not prescribing the lowest price at all. It is just a suite for tendering. So it is a format in which tendering must take place in government institutions. So it doesn't determine the lowest price. It is a suite. It's a form of contract. That is the difference. What we did is to use the government distribution to determine the lowest price. So it's two completely different things.
Okay.
And the ratings, like CE1, CE2, the ratings are being used by Sunrail, and for every contract that goes out, we will prescribe the civil engineering rating of the contractors. And in this particular model, the subcontract part, so not the main contract or subcontractors, the work that goes to the subcontractors are all 6 CE and smaller. So instead of having a set aside, we can now in this way make sure that this work is done by a smaller contractor, but on a tendering basis.
Okay, Chair, I'm going to finish off by saying that effectively what Sunrail is saying is that in the past, hopefully in the future it'll change, but in the past they've just basically done what they felt like doing, ignored legislation, and are now presenting a letter to a list to us saying, guys, we made a mistake, but please just believe that everything in this huge list, they're like firm of attorneys who are trying to swamp us with paper, okay? So please just believe that everything in this list is hunky-dory. And I, for one, as a member of this committee, am saying no. I would like to see that model. I'd like to see a detailed explanation on each one of those to explain why the model justificated the appointment. Because we've even got people on this list that might not exist. That list needs to be expanded a lot. And until that happens, I will not rest easy that all of that was done correctly. Although, of course, we still know it's irregular because of the legislation. But I want to try and detect not just irregular, Chair, I want to detect if there are criminals at play here. That's what I'm after. And I'm sure a lot of my colleagues and comrades would agree. Thank you, Chair.
All right. Ross?
Thank you, Chairperson. I would just like to address the very serious issue of Sunrail going forward as a going concern and whether that is possible. And there's some very, very serious concerns with regards to this. If we look at the annual financial statements, somehow in a little bit of a contravention with your annual report. But let me start off by saying that we've seen the trend of unlawfully inflated business expenditure, but we've also seen the trend perhaps in assets, excessive increases in the assets valuation, and we have to look at those methodologies, how you increase the asset valuation. I'd just like to make the point first and foremost that I believe this is perhaps done with a view to the current rating agency that has already downgraded Sunrail. And this has a very serious implication in terms of going forward as a going concern. But you see, in terms of your income and in terms of the e-toll debt, let me just make the following point with regards to uncollected e-toll revenue. Sunrail's trade receivables, over 94% in the past 3 years, is attributed to the uncollected e-toll revenue at a discounted rate. Can you give me an idea of what the outstanding e-toll debt currently is?
Sure.
Approximately 11.4 billion as at towards the end of October, September 2016, my apologies. That's the latest figures.
Thank you. Chairperson, then I would like to ask a follow-up question with regard to this. For some reason, a nominal write-off of e-toll debt of 90 million in 2016 and 143 million in 2015 did occur. But is this not grossly out of line with the volume and the value of the total debt? Why was the written off amount so small?
Thank you, Chair. I think through the PFMA, it is indicated that if you have revenue that is owed to the state, you must do everything in your power to collect that debt. So you can't write off, a public entity can't write off debt until they've followed the full course
of the law to collect the debt. Therefore, we don't write off any debts. The small, the nominal ones were for people that either there's been proof that they've either deceased or something to that extent. That's why it's very small. The full, because the non-payment of soul is still a criminal offence, we have to follow the due course in terms of the PFMA.
Yeah, certainly I accept that, because we have the same situation with municipalities in terms of debtors not paying their debt, and then somehow the municipality is then categorized as a going concern. In fact, such an entity is completely bankrupt. Now, we're trying to get to the grit of the whole problem, whether Sunroll can be sustained as an entity, and in terms of the entity's liquidity. Now, just going perhaps to your asset base, and perhaps I can refer you just to the financial statements. Chairperson, I'm very close to concluding. You have to give me an opportunity.
I don't want you to stray very far from I will not,
because but this has a huge impact in terms of the capacity and systems needed to improve, to see that at least we have a viable entity.
Okay.
Now, in the financial statements on page 144 in your annual report, revaluation reserves is stated at 239 billion. Would you agree that gives you a marked up advantage in terms of your assets? Is that correct, the revaluation? And then I would just like to take you through to give you the context of this. I'm quite concerned that in the 2008 and 2009, we had a 146% increase in the total assets value, and then further a 503% in the following year in 2010. That is 187 billion. And then also 334 billion from 2010 to 2016. These are excessive re-evaluations. Do you think this necessitates perhaps an external investigation as to your evaluation of the asset base and to see whether Sunroll is indeed a viable entity?
Thank you, Chair. I think maybe just to explain very briefly how the revaluation is based on IFRS, International Financial Reporting Standards, which gives you a clear guideline of how to revalue your assets. Our assets are basically, just to explain briefly, consist of the land on which the road is, and then obviously the improvement which is the road on top of that. So the valuation of the land itself is done through an external party that is accredited valuers to determine the value of the road, of the land. Then the value of the improvement is done through the replacement value that is as explained in the policy. Those revaluations, the Auditor General does audit those, and they've also used external parties to confirm those revaluations annually.
Yes, I agree. It could be normal business practice, but it could be still a concern as to the real value of the assets. Would you agree on that?
Sorry, Chair. The basics of this is as per policy and is as determined in the IFRS. The basic of what is a replacement value, you determine what would it cost you to replace that road, then you depreciate it by the condition of the actual road. And that is a very accepted practice. There is nothing untoward about that.
And then I'd just like to conclude perhaps in terms of your operating loss, which is close to a billion. Is that correct for the current year? The previous year it was a billion. And then just linking that to your regular expenditure of 1.1 billion for the current year, and then 2.7 in the last 2 years. Can I just make the following conclusion with regards to that? That Sunroll allows grossly different costs between tenders and projects of similar nature. Perhaps in that context, is there something in terms of the regular expenditure? And that you've cited that it was largely due to BBBE development projects. But certainly our information is that it is not just, it's actually with regards to the non-BBBE projects that the irregular expenditure occurred. So it's with regards to your loss and irregular expenditure, which is more or less the same amount. Could that have been, if that was prevented, could you have been into a profit?
Maybe just quickly, FanRail consists of two businesses, non-toll, toll. The non-toll business is solely ring-fenced in terms of the government grant received, and that's what we spend on the non-toll roads. The declared toll roads, separate business, ring-fenced revenue spent on that. The loss there that you see in the, if you look at the segment report right to the end of the financial statements, you can clearly see that that loss comes from the toll side, where we have significant financial finance charges that contribute to that loss, which is now a different subject to discuss. In terms of the irregular expenditure, I think that there is no correlation between the two, the loss and the amount on the irregular expenditure. The $1.1 billion relates to routine road maintenance, which is an operational expenditure that cuts across both toll and non-toll. Maybe also to add that we, in terms of the working paper or the determination of the valuation of our assets, we can certainly make that available to the committee.
That would be very helpful. And then the big bone of contention with regards to the e-toll project. Would you agree that there's about 10 billion rand overspent in terms of the contract? Grossly overpriced, as much as 150%.
I think for some input from some of our colleagues that have been there since then, that's totally incorrect.
Is that incorrect?
Yeah.
So the procurement in terms of that specific project, I know it's under investigation by the public protector, is it correct? But you're making the statement that it is quite in line with normal accounting standards, the cost.
Yeah, I think in addition to normal accounting standards, I think they've always ensured that it's been value for money in terms of all the contracts that have been awarded. So I think the final, and we hope that the public protector's report can come out sooner than later, so it puts everybody at mind at ease.
Okay. All right, Comrade Kuno.
Thank you, Chairperson. Timothy Bokshap. PFMA for public entities in Section 51, 1 of A2, it says the accounting officer must ensure that it maintains a system of internal audit under the control and direction of an audit committee operating in terms of regulations. That there, Chairperson, about, can you please take me serious? I'm just reading you something that you don't read, and or you have just tried to ignore the PFMA on the internal auditors. I mean, I think so. Lots of comrades have talked about this. I'm trying to emphasize that according to the PFMA, you need to have people that are employed by the public entity, not what you are spending, the 20 million rands for outsourcing your contractors and all that. I'm just trying to show you that if you look at PFMA Section 51, it will tell you all that. And Chairperson, linked to that, I need to see the organogram of Sandra. Like, I'm hoping that they have it at hand, since the Chairperson of the Board earlier on said the situation will not be the same next year. We want to see your organogram, because the organogram, it will be telling us that the mistakes that we have made here are actually rectified. Can we have that? And I want to see the vacancy rate as well in that organogram. And when are they going to employ those people? Chairperson, one of the questions that I've been raising my hand, and my BP, I think, has gone up high, because I'm really, really frustrated when you look at this irregular expenditure and the contractors. And I cannot sit here as a public representative and be told by somebody who's working for SANRAL that they're actually making favor for black people or small businesses to come on board. 7 years ago, Minister, I used to be a member of Transport Portfolio Committee, And I know since then there was a problem of transformation, and there were no black people coming into fall, you know, being part of road construction. And we were told then, I don't think it's 7 years ago, it's 10 years ago, I was with the Menier in front of me here. We were told and we were promised that the situation is going to change. But you look into the chart, I don't know what you call it, the spreadsheet. You don't find any black businesses there. And the only ones that are there are your Tsela. And you ask yourself, okay, you know that they need to be CIDP at a certain level. These subcontractors that your contractors have taken on board, are they getting any CIDP rating? Has their CIDP rating, has it gone up high so that they can also be part of the process of tendering? I'll make an example of Tsela, because Tsela has got five subcontracting. What is their CIDP level?
Thank you, Chair. I think the thank you, Honourable Member Medlock. We've noted the comments in terms of the internal audits, internal capacity building, and we take that seriously. The copy of the standard organigram, unfortunately, we're not asked for the Chair, but based on your request, we can provide the current organigram to the committee. And with regard to the schedule and irregular expenditure, unfortunately, we're not prepared to answer those questions, not prepared in terms of having that information available with regard to the CIDB grading and the demographic of the firm ownership. But with the revised schedule that that we are going to be providing, we can provide the demographic ownership of the subcontractors, and we can then also try and ascertain as to what CIDB grading the subcontractors have, and whether the CIB degrading has been over a period of time. The latter bit may be a bit difficult to obtain, but we'll try our best to obtain the CIDB grading currently of the subcontractors. But my apologies, Chair, we don't have that information on hand.
All right.
Chairperson, we cannot, after so many years in power, we don't see any black people coming to play, to be part of road constructors. And I want to ask you, I know it's not related to finances, but I want to ask you, do you have a transformation plan on how are you going to take these subcontractors that you have contracted illegally, so because the tendering process was not followed? Do you have any plan of upgrading them to the level that they can also bid for tenders, and maybe they will also get these tenders unlawfully like you are doing?
Chair, our contract subcommittee has been hard at work in terms of ensuring that transformation happens and sustainable. I'm very happy to provide a status quo report in terms of the initiatives that the contracts committee has implemented, and that's work in progress, because it's an ongoing initiative of SANDOM. So I'll be able to provide you with the actual facts of the interaction with the industry, the different youth, the different women groups, and the different sectors, and in addition with the meeting with the black construction companies to be able to identify their concerns about SANDRA and how we could assist in terms of ensuring that there's more equitable distribution of work in the construction sector. I'm happy to give you that, Chair.
Okay. Thank you, Chairperson. That would be very helpful, because if you look at the situation, even the people who are here right now, it's not really showing the demographics of this country. But again, Chairperson of the Board, when you started with the e-tolling, there was a plan. how much did you envisage from getting from the e-tolling?
So at that point in time, unfortunately, I wasn't at the organization, but we do get a report at every board in terms of an updated cash flow of what our projections are compared to what actual are. So we can go back in history, and in terms of the time of the commencement of the project and provide this committee in confidence those cash flows and those projections at the commencement of the implementation of the e-tolling.
That would be really helpful because we also need to see the accountability. Sure. Because obviously when you stated that it has caused a serious problems in Gauteng, people cannot pay because of all the things that they are paying. And now that's why I want to know exactly when you started, how much did you budget for the e-tolling? What is it that you had in mind? And if you can give us that plan. That would be really helpful. Thank you very much, Chairperson.
Chair, we would provide that. Thank you.
Professor? Then, yeah. All right, no, maybe before you...
Quick follow-up.
No, let's give your colleague, he has not said a word this morning. Then I'll come to you, and then we'll come... We'll then end here.
Yeah.
Chair, thanks. I stepped out when my colleague was asking the questions with regards to the contracts and the subcontractors. And I won't repeat that question. What I wanted to ask is, and please stop me if it was asked, is what processes are there to ensure that these companies are legitimate, are registered, and so forth? Because I have information, or we have information, that there are companies that aren't registered. Or if they are, they're a completely different name or just unrelated to the names listed on the in this list. So you did ask. I apologize for that. Then the other question I wanted to ask was with regards to the bonds that are raised. Are they raised to just merely finance current debt? Just unpack that. Sorry, the other questions have been asked. Thanks.
Okay. Just note the question.
Chair, thank you. Just a quick follow-up, and it relates to what Honourable Ross raised. I understand fully your explanation of the valuation of the road infrastructure and how you get there. What is puzzling for me, though, is that in the homework that we've done, we've had a look at your, I believe this was in your annual report. But in 2007, we had the under concession and not under concession value of roads at $8 billion. In 2008, it went to $10 billion. Then it jumped 125% in value from 8 to 9, went to $122 billion. And then it did a massive jump from 2009 to 2010, okay, your valuation of the system from $22 billion to $179 billion, which percentage-wise was a jump of 685%. And feeding into what Honourable Ross was asking about being a going concern and your investment grade, are you guys artificially padding your asset base to look better by saying, colleagues between us, frankly, that you've got a collectible of 11 odd billion rand in tolls? You and I know as well as I do that's not a collectible. The people of Gauteng have stood up and said, we are not paying. It's not a collectible. Unless you're going to go and sue them all and confiscate their houses and drag them kicking and screaming to you and effectively cause a civil war in Joburg, okay, it is not collectible. You can't reflect that as an asset. I know you're supposed to, in terms of the law, try and chase it as much as you want, but in terms of affecting who invests in you, I think that you are being economical with the truth, let's put it that way. Then I would really like an explanation as to why there was a 685% jump in evaluation between 9 to 10. Well, let's go 8, 9, and 10, because it's 125, and then 685. So overall,
about an 800% evaluation increase. Now, that either means that all the roads failed at once, okay, or it meant that suddenly there was a massive increase in building of roads, an 800% increase in building of roads over 2 years, which affected your valuation because you valued it at replacement cost. If you could answer those two issues, thanks.
Okay. Let's respond to these two, and then I'll give Comrade Kuno and Comrade Mente, and they will be responded to, and then Comrade Klengwa and Comrade Kikane, and then we're going to finish with Comrade Boy. Yeah, let's respond to...
I think the first question has been answered in terms of those 11 companies. The issue with the bonds and the valuation, I think the issue with the valuation, we have offered the working paper on the valuation, which will then test and provide the necessary proof and evidence in terms of the valuation. But I'll ask the CFO to add on that one. And the bonds raised should be able to give you details in terms of the current bonds and the roll forward and the need for that.
On the bonds, as you understand, with infrastructure funding, initially you spend on your capex, your initial construction cost, and as time goes by, we call it a J curve, your revenue starts catching up. But included in that is also your continuous maintenance of the road and the operations thereof. So the bonds that we currently are issuing is to fund the toll portfolio as a whole, both for continuous maintenance, to repay the initial construction cost, and also to service the debt. That is what that is. And normally on our infrastructure, on most of these roads, it takes between 16 to 22 years to repay that initial capital cost. On the valuation, I think just to add, one of the areas that you will see in those years specifically is if you look at the number of kilometers that we've added to our portfolio. So as we incorporate more roads from the provinces and they are declared as national roads, they're obviously increasing our asset base. So where you see the big jumps is where there's obviously more assets. And if you understand that we don't pay to incorporate those roads, so the original cost is zero, but the asset is increased.
Chairperson, I wanted to say this in front of the minister. I'm glad that she's back. That is really disturbing, minister, when you have people who are really not committed or they don't really take accountability very seriously. You know, earlier on, Comrade Tim here asked about different companies that are not really in the, if it's on Cipro, I don't know the new name that he said. And the chairperson of the board, the way he answered, he said, thank you very much, sir, for bringing that forward. We'll certainly take that into consideration and we'll go and investigate. It means, how do you give companies tenders without doing due diligence? I think it's the first thing that one should be doing. So if you have people who are really not committed, who don't know what they're doing, if you ask them right now, how can you account to the 1.1 billion rands that you of irregular expenditure? I don't think they have an answer, because the answers that they've been giving us throughout this morning are the answers of people who are really not taking themselves seriously and who are not taking government seriously as well.
Okay. Comrade Mint.
Thanks, Chair. Chair, firstly, I need some clarity. I hope you will know. On the first page of your spreadsheet, there is Senza Konge Cleaning, which is a subcontractor of G4 Civil. The Senza Konge Cleaning, which services are they providing? Is it the cleaning in buildings, or is it the cleaning on the road?
Senza Konge Cleaning.
that is doing some of the elements in routine road maintenance. I don't have all the details here with me, but this is just a name. So it can be cleaning the drainage structures, side drains, cleaning the road, littering. So I think that is just basically referring to a name, but not necessarily the exact function that they perform.
My concern there, Chairperson, is that if the cleaning, if Senza Konke is providing cleaning services, why is it outsourced by the department? Because the cleaning is an essential thing for every day, either in offices or on the road. So it should be part and parcel of them as a department that they have cleaning services staff, because they have paid these people $47 million for the contract. And if you break that $47 million down to permanent staff, that's a lot of money you could be paying permanent people than outsourcing. Now, secondly, on page 12 of your spreadsheet, there is the very last person on the 1.1 billion, Cobus van der Walt, a contract of 6 million, 6.9. Contract was cancelled due to a contract was awarded to a consulting engineer firm who submitted a fraudulent engineering council certificate, and then it was, upon discovery, it was terminated. But there is that price of 6.9 million. Can you explain what's happening there? Page 12. Of the spreadsheet. There's a 6.9 million, and the person who was involved is Cobus van der Walt. What's the explanation for all this? Because this contract was terminated, but there's still 6.9 million. That's reflecting here.
Right. Yeah. Get a
We will have to provide that information. The contract was cancelled, obviously, because of fraudulent activity, and we will come back with the recourse being taken.
So we are recovering the 6.9 million.
We will report on that as well.
Okay, thanks, Chair. My last one is on page 201 of your annual report on deviations. Your explanation here on the website, which was supposed to have been tendered. And you are indicating that it was an unforeseen matter. I do not understand how. You know the website contract is coming to an end. Someone must renew the contract. Then there is a delay. Delay is not foreseen. I do not understand that.
Chair, there was a delay. The tender was not awarded by the Congress Committee, and they asked questions, and hence the delay. But the full details of that can also be provided.
Okay. It looks like we are going to wait forever for someone to give us the realities of business in terms of Sandra. Also on the same page, lastly, on delegations. Someone was supposed to have renewed, and that someone did not do anything. Page 201. last paragraph, take over off-site and material testing, the laboratory, which was not in which was not satisfactory, and you have to change that. That is all vague. I do not understand, and we have spent money. My problem is things that you establish, they are very costly. There is always money that is aligned to every problem, and that money doesn't, you do not indicate if the money has been recovered or the money is gone, because this shows under irregular expenditure. But to me, from where I'm seated, I'm looking at fruitless and wasteful expenditure. You cancel contracts, but they still reflect lots and lots of money, not just small amounts of money. It's millions. That is the same thing as this Cobus van der Walt. It's cancelled because you were not satisfied. And there is still 2 million that you paid. Why did you pay it when you are not satisfied?
Chair, in both those cases, the services was delivered. For the one about the with the Cobus one, was one of the consulting engineers that they submitted in their tender, we found that one of them did not have a valid certificate, but the rest of their team that they provided to us were indeed qualifications that were valid. As far as the laboratory services is concerned, this entity ceded their contract to another entity without asking for approval from SANRAL prior to the ceding happening. That approval only came 10 months later, which is why this is a problem. That approval was then not given. That's why it's indicating that it didn't go through the delegated authority. There was a warning letter issued to the project manager involved, but the service was delivered for that value that is indicated there.
Right. We have Nomsa, acting CEO. Yes, comrade.
Sir, I just want to make not sure whether it's something. I want to say something about making an observation. And I wanted to make it initially sort of keep my mind. On page 142 of the annual report, the statement of responsibility by the board of directors. The directors are responsible for the preparation, integrity, and fair presentation of the financial statements of SANRAL. The financial statements and so on, reflected on page 144 to 218, have been prepared in accordance with the International Financial Reporting Standards. Now, Chair, the point I want to make is this. SANRAL is not an island in terms of public accounts. It must and it will report in terms of the PFMA. As much as it's benchmarked against anything else, that is the point of departure. And the point and the concerns raised by the AG earlier on speak to this. I find it surprising that no mention here is even made that we are reporting in accordance with the PFMA or Treasury regulations. I think that message needs to be very clear coming out of this meeting from SCOPA. That SANRAL cannot see itself away from everybody else. We've looked at the issues of the established practices that they have to say, no, we don't see that that's fine for us, it's good for us. It cannot continue, Chair. I've got a problem if we allow this to continue, because we're setting a precedent which says we are going to tailor-make practices outside the PFMA. And then that opens the floodgate for everybody else to begin telemaking themselves. And so the chairperson of the board is the one who signs off on this. And it encapsulates exactly the concerns that the Auditor General has raised in the commentaries is made on pages 130 to 133, which reflect the issue that not reporting as per the prescribed framework. It's all good and well to want to be a global trendsetter, but charity begins at home, and there are things here which we must actually subscribe to. And I think they are simple. Let us build the capacity that is necessary. I'm expressing this because I just find it to be a major indictment that the chairperson of the board would want to couch everything in international practice and not respond to the challenges which the AG has spoken to about the shortcomings of the PFM. It's not a question. That's why I was still trying to, in my head, couch it in whatever it was. But I'm making that observation, Chair, that SANRAL must and will function like everybody else. They are not salarying in the back room of AMA entities of people or in departments reporting with PFML, and they've got their own rules. It can't happen, Chair.
All right. Okay. Comrade Kikan.
No, thanks, Chair. Chair, I've got two questions. My first question is, it is linked to what Honorable Hlengwa has asked. Maybe the board must give us some indication as to what is their attitude towards other organs of state when they've taken a decision. Do you implement those decisions or you second guess them?
Right, can we respond? I think it's direct and specific.
Thank you, Chair. To Honorable Member Kakani, in terms of SANRAL, our attitude is that we don't see ourselves as just a standalone SOE. We interact both with the National Department of Transport, with the Department of Finance, Department of Environment Affairs, Water Affairs, and etc. in carrying out that. So we have respect for our colleagues. If there's issues that need to be discussed, we discuss. And if there needs stuff to be deliberated, we do so. So I think we have a very healthy relationship and we respect each other. And as SANRAL and as a board from our governance, we take all that of utmost importance.
Okay.
Thanks for that commitment. But if you look at page 141 of your report, I want to go back to the 760 million that I spoke about earlier on, because there was a decision from the Competition Commission on the 760 million, and it is in your report as the chair. Initially, you said you withdrew the summons. Now, hence my question, because if there is a decision taken by another organ of state, yours is just to implement. But earlier on you said, no, because there's this team that is operating in the same space, you felt that it is important for you to withdraw that so that you be in line, that is, with the working of that team. You remember you saying that in the same meeting today. Can you give me an explanation as to why? Because this is very serious. I think the chair indicated earlier on that if it is other ordinary members of society, it is referred to as corruption. But because it's big companies, no, we are treating it. That is very light.
What do you want him to say? Because I hear you are actually making a statement. Observation. I don't know if you want him to agree or disagree with you.
To agree or disagree with me. Because this is very clear that initially this meeting was misinformed, that this was withdrawn. And I knew that this came from the report of the chair, and hence I quoted it. And I thought that when you present that is a report, particularly in the annual that is report, you know exactly what is contained, particularly in your report. Now, if you just present that is a report without even interrogating it, I've got a serious problem with that. Hence, my next question would be, okay, Minister, I'll come back to you. Hence, my next question would be, did you, as the board, get performance bonuses?
To be fair on the SANRAL board and SANRAL as a whole, I think I responded to the question and I made reference to the process that we're involved in since 2013 that culminated now in October 2016. The statement on the Chairperson's report is correct as at the time this report was drafted. And I think it must be a put on record here that he responded earlier on, and I also responded and gave explanation to the process that led to the agreement that we have now with these corrupt construction companies that led us to this agreement that we have that was signed on now on the, I think it's the 11th of October. So necessarily, the actions of October 2016 would then be reported on in the 2016-17 financial year. So it would not reflect in this report. So I beg the committee to actually understand the context and the process that ensued after the making of the statement by the chairperson of the board.
Okay. I think that then gives context. The withdrawal or the agreement was reached in October, which is last month, whereas the annual report was signed off sometime June, July, August, yeah. Comrade Boy Sizoivala.
Can I just confirm, sorry, my, I don't want to be rude, that the board doesn't receive any performance bonus.
Oh, okay.
We receive remuneration that's stipulated in terms of the National Gazette, and it's set by cabinet.
All right. Okay.
Comrade Boy? Yes, you see, sir, I'm talking to you. You see, your attitude towards the law, I don't mind what the minister says, it's very problematic. You've got no regard for the law and no respect for the law. That's where you stand as the chairperson of this board. And we must contextualize to you our approach. You hear what the executive is saying. Our approach is different to what the ministry is saying. Because if we say to you, given your attitude that the Auditor General has captured on point 30, expenditure management, that they have had total disregard for this 1 billion irregular expenditure, which our colleagues here have been trying to go through with you point by point to try to solicit the best of answers from you, has proven to be hard. So we should be agreeing with the Auditor General that you've got no regard for the law. You've got no regard for the law on the basis of your methodology of how one of our members, your team, has been so eloquent to trying to outline the contradictions of this triple what whatsoever you're using versus the black empowerment, which is a law. Your methodology here is derailing the black empowerment, the BEE. You've got your own thing, which is based on your own pricing and lowering of prices and all those things. I must say, since I've come into government, breaking down of policy does really mean you've gone against us. We created that law of black empowerment. We have written that law of black empowerment, and it's policy in government. And your methodology from UNISA is breaking of that law. You've got no regard for the law. But my last point, just to prove that you've got no regard for the law, is based on your report on page 113, when we deal with issues of governance and the contradictions of how you deal with the hotline and how you have got total disregard for other institutions. Because if you had responsibility, that's why you're saying that you can't recall even the 64 cases that have been put to you by the public through the hotline, because in your report that you have written on page 113, I would have loved one to reach it, I mean to read it out to you. It clearly explains to us you've got no regard for the law. That's why I would, where I'm seated, without compromising you, be able to ask the Hawks to take up this matter. They are not meant for you, but they clearly speak to you that you've got no regard for the law. You've got no respect, just unrun, for what happens in South Africa. You've got your own worked out way of how you interpret the law. You see, that's why you've got your own methodologies of trying to make us understand what it is in here. We crafted the law, sir. And
going against policy in this government is criminal. That I just wanted you to know and take note of that. Your 113 position where you say in the way you are outlining this, I would have just loved to ask you as a person, would you resign when we come to conclusion with the hawks and the type of behavior you have taken in this institution with your board, because you've got no regard for the law. You keep on saying that we have investigated. What you are saying, on the 31st of March, you say reported incidents have been investigated and appropriate action has been taken or is being taken. I mean, how can you write that? It shows total disregard for the law, sir. And you say 0% on what the public have reported to you on hotline. And what you say to us in your contradictions doesn't talk to those sense. I'm just saying, sir, and I'm just saying, Chairperson, we should proceed with our own actions.
All right. Okay. No, that's fine. I want us to...
Chair, I have a point of order.
You have a point of order.
Well, my question has not been answered. I asked an emphatic question about the collectability of the toll money. And I was told about the valuation of roads, which I'm grateful for, but I was sidestepped on that. I want not what the law says should be done. What is SANRAL's honest, realistic appraisal of whether they're ever going to collect that money? And if they can't collect it, how can it be a collectible asset?
As SANRAL, as the board and the management, we're going to put in all effort to ensure that we comply with the law of the land and follow due process in terms of recovering those amounts that are outstanding. I think we're unable at this point in time to say we are not going to collect the money or we are going to.
No, I think
we have more positive process.
I think the question is in relation to what you have as outstanding from people who are supposed to pay vis-a-vis what you're collecting. What are the trends? When you look at the situation right now, I hear what you're saying in terms of what possible action in terms of what the law provides. But right now, when you look at your cash flow in terms of those payments, are we seeing an improvement? Are we flat? Are we down, or what is the situation?
Chair, the CFO has confirmed that in the last 2 months, the percentage of receipts in terms of outstanding amounts has slightly increased. So we are positive that you'll see a gradual increase, not as the increase as we'd like, that everybody should pay their outstanding amounts. But there is a positive there. And in terms of our own projections, that we will be ultra-conservative, we think that we would get the commitment of the public in terms of paying that. But very, very small increase over the last 2 months.
All right. Okay. All right. I just want to say this. One, that case on conflict of interest, we would want that when we finish here, the leadership of the Hawks are here. We want you to interact with them. Well, Lieutenant General Kameza is not here, send an apology. That's why he sent a representative officer. Because we want to ensure that those who transgress the law in the public sector to know that there are consequences, action is taken against them as an incentive for others not to, what some will say, it's a disincentive, but to ensure that no one thinks it is possible to do wrong and, you know, and escape. Two, the 68 cases, I can't remember what that page was, that you got through the through the hotline and how they were investigated and how they were finally concluded. If we can get that spreadsheet, can we get it before the house arrives? Can we get it by next week, Wednesday? Thirdly, Comrade Minister, I think we need to talk to this because SANRAL is a public entity. We would want to see SANRAL being able to, you know, to run its affairs. The outsourcing mindset is completely at variance with the what we call the public sector mindset. From outsourcing your financial statement compilation, outsourcing of your internal audit. Actually, even these contracts, comrades, if you look at their presentation, it is actually outsourcing the road maintenance, because the company that wins the tender, the 20% that they keep is a management fee, but the actual work is done by these SMMEs that are subcontracted by that company. So SANRAL says, you know what, we want these roads maintained. Can you go and look for people to maintain the roads? We'll give you the money. You go and do it. And that is why you'll find that some of these companies then, in their procurement of SMMEs, do all manner of wrong things. And you do not have a way of ensuring that they follow due processes in terms of how they procure these MMEs. So it is also outsourcing those processes. So they can keep 60, they can give 60 to 80%. That is why here when they say main contractor, where is that page? When they say main contractor, they say main. Where is that page? Where is that page? Yeah. They say main contractor equals managing function. So it is part of the internal capacity. It's just not there. And in this committee, we have been very consistent from the very first day that I've been here. We want the state, we want what is public to remain public. We want SANRAL, like all other entities, to have an internal audit function of employed people. We want SANRAL to have its own, project managers, because so far we have not been proven wrong, or it has not been proven that if things are handled by employees of the state, they become more expensive than if they're done privately. So we would want to say that SANRAL should, and I think what Comrade Lewa observed, I think, Chair, it is a lingering impression that we have. You know, it's almost as if SANRAL is a private company that has been called to Parliament. We don't get that feel of you being a public entity that operates within the realm of the public sector. I think we need to change that. It's so unacceptable to us that we need to have that. Fourthly, can you, in terms of the Comrade Rotterdam, I hear your point about the model, which at this stage has been discontinued. Now, in the details, you're right, that's where criminality or non-criminality lies. Can you send us a copy of the model in terms of how it was conceptualized so that we can see how it operates? I hear you. You wanted the decision on each of the contracts that was awarded, but I think let's see the model and understand how it functions. But like I said, Comrade Prada said, the point here was the contract is given to one company, and it is that company that then goes and outsources. And I think the point you've raised about subcontractors that do not exist, and I think if you check here on the spreadsheet, you'll find that some subcontractors will always appear with a particular main contractor. So it raises on what?
It's a huge job, man, where they call it procurement of route and road maintenance. It talks to what we've been arguing. Seems to be here. Is that the document you're talking about? Is there a different document to this methodology that you're talking about?
No, it's fine. Let them send us the model, and then because that contains the overarching theory of what they needed to. And then also check. Can you send us the organogram of SANRA? Indicating the, even of course, indicate the vacancy levels, which areas are vacant. Okay, the ETOLs, you've spoken to that. Lastly, comrades, I think we do need to talk to this issue of the public protector's investigation, because one of the main problems, I'll not say the only, but one of the main problems that have arisen in the public space around Itoli has been the fact that there have been a lot of wrong practices in how the thing was structured and how things were done. An issue that is of interest to the biggest province in the country, and even those of us who come from the outlying province, we fly to Joburg and we have to drive under those ions going home. It's of concern to almost everybody. And somehow the public protector finds it convenient or correct to be pedestrian about that issue. And almost 4 years down the line, we have no report. And if it is true that you made follow-ups, And you have no indication about whether there is progress or not. I find that to be completely unacceptable. I know I raised issues that concern non-entities, people in the rural areas, you know, communities with mines in the northwest, about their realities and whatnot. More than a year after I sent a letter and numerous phone calls, I still do not know whether there is progress or not. That's fine. Those are rural people, nobodies. But I think that it is something that does need to be taken up. I'm talking about the office. It's a pity the individual is no longer there, but I'm talking about the office. So that the public is equally protected. Don't get a query sent by a political party today, and within 10 months, a report is on the table. You know, it does create problems. So we're dealing with your annual report. There is an issue that is a question mark, and we can't talk to it because we're still waiting for other process. I think. So I would say, Comrade Minister, board, beyond this meeting, can we make representations to the new public protector? But we can't have this matter hanging on forever. You know, it does need to be solved. sorted out, cleared, and we go on with life. And to indicate our concerns as well, that we would want this thing cleared. Now, having said that, Comrade Minister, let me hand over to you for 1 or 2 minutes to pick up on any other issues that we spoke about.
Thank you very, very much, Chairperson, and all members of the Select Committee. And I think today we have identified quite a number of areas that need urgent attention. One of those is in particular the issue that is why we are here, based on the letter that you wrote to the chairperson of the board of SANRAL, incidentally addressed to Dr. Popo Molefe, but that is another matter, which indicated the issues under irregular and expenditure that needed to be covered. But we also note that the committee does not only confine itself to the matters that would have been raised in the letter, that the whole report was then put under scrutiny, and I would want to apologize probably for the lack of full preparation on the part of the SANRAL team with regard to other matters, but only with they prepared only with regard to the matters that the letter had identified. One of the things that I've picked up from the committee is that there is a need for SANRAL, as big as it is as a company, to actually accept that the fact that up till today, National Treasury has not responded to their request on with regard to the practice or model that they have been using. They should be able to look at managing this matter differently, and I appreciate the fact that since 2013 they have been trying to get out of this contracting model. What I've picked up is that there is a need for SANRAL to have some kind of business unit responsible for routine road maintenance so that they don't outsource further. Because you would understand the way that they operate is that we as a department are giving them the responsibility of the department. So they went further to outsource the mandate that the department gave them. We need to deal with that. And I need to indicate that on the SANRAL board, there is a representative of the department who is actually responsible for roads a branch, and he needs to have observed this and picked up this. But also on the board of SANRAL, there's a representative of National Treasury who sits on the board of SANRAL, who should have also picked up this particular matter. I've also picked up the need for in-house internal audit function that needs to be built. The other thing that I've noted, Chairperson, is also the issue that is a red herring in government, which is project and contract management, which we need to really focus on. But I do take note of the issues that are being raised, that it does come across and seem, and I would want to indicate that with my engagement with the SANRAL board, it has never been a case where I pick up that there are people who are not serious about the law, but that the fact that including the issue that we spoke about earlier on the companies, the corrupt companies, construction companies. It was SANRAL that actually delayed the whole process, I would want to indicate, because of their legalistic nature. The other issue that I believe SANRAL needs to address is consequence management. And I just want to say to the Honorable Nyamiboy, the issue that you raised under the issue of the hotline, I want to indicate that that is a strategic objective that they have identified, that they have put in place. The fact that they've got 0% variance, it means that they believe that they don't have to create space for not addressing what comes from the hotline. So I just need to separate that from the issues that have been raised as part of the hotline. But we do agree. The other thing, Chairperson, that is of interest to the committee is that we are working on an MOU between the Department of Transport and the Department of Small Business, in particular with regard to this issue of SMME support and SMME development. And we believe that the existence and creation of this department would help us to be able to deal with this particular model that we have here. But I want to say, Chairperson, in conclusion, SANRAL is dealing with a big challenge. Out of the 750,000 kilometers of road network in South Africa, they've got little bit more than 22,000 kilometers. And as we speak, provinces have been handing over road kilometers and kilometers onto SANRAL. And that adds to the assets that SANRAL has that has not necessarily been budgeted for and planned for. And as we speak, I would want to indicate that the conditions on our roads necessitates that the capacity of SANRAL be built up to be able to support provinces. We've also identified the need for rural provinces. But I want to say lastly, we apologize for the last mishap, for the information not having been able to meet the standards that the committee had set for SANRAL, but I would believe that going forward, we will address that. With regard to the public protector, I want to report to this committee that I have had two opportunities that I had requested the public protector, the former public protector, for a meeting officially to come and discuss and get an update on the status of investigations of transport portfolio. You would know there's investigations on RSR, on Artea, on SANRAL, AXA, and many others under the transport of the 12 entities. There's quite a lot of investigation, including in the Department of Transport itself, as well as matters related to RTMC. But unfortunately, the first instance we had a meeting, there was a medical emergency that I couldn't avoid. I ended up in hospital. We couldn't have that particular meeting. Thereafter, it was just not possible for us to have the meeting with the public protector up to the stage, including the fact that I wrote to her before she left to say, we want to know what is happening. Instead, I received a letter that said, I owe her a report. But that is now water under the bridge. We are engaging with the new public protector, and I would believe that these matters we will be able to deal with, because when it comes to transport, there is a big beehive of activity that both these guys sitting down the room as well as the public protector is dealing with. So I would want to say that we will keep the committee, if the committee so agree, informed on what is happening. But we want to make note of the fact that we want to work with the committee, and we appreciate the work of the committee because it points us to some of the things that, as the shareholder department, sometimes becomes a blind spot. Thank you very much.
All right. Thanks very much, Comrade Minister, Chairperson of SANRAL and the officials. Well, we hope you have a full appreciation of the areas of concern from Parliament that you need to exert yourselves on. The information that you have requested, let's have it by next week. And once again, the Auditor General's Office, thank you very much for your ever presence. And also to the Hawks, we thank you very much. We hope that when we close here, you will be interacting with the SANRAL on that case. Comrades, tomorrow it's PRASA. So we...
Yeah.
We, yeah, well, and then what?
Your metro, that was late.
Sewa and Ross, we had hoped Comrade Vincent will be available. He's not. So, Ross, regular expenditure, Sewa, I don't see a good person with full expenditure. But all of us, comrades, let's go and study and prepare. And go till tomorrow.
Can I just take a photo of the rock? Thank you.
Thank you.